KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. My name is Mike Hagan. This is Radio Orbit. Tonight we've got the wonderful Star Newland and Dr. Michael Heisen. We'll do that in just a minute, and we'll talk to you then. Wow, how about that for the beginning of a show, people? Huh? I have some major technical difficulties, obviously, with the music. So, anyway, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit. It's about 5 minutes after 11 on the 22nd of December. And what I'll do is just chat with you for a minute, and then we'll pray to the radio gods that my little player here starts to handle things a little bit better, and we'll try it again in a few minutes. But before we do that, we'll say thank you to Debbie Johnson, as always. Free Range Radio Theater from 10 p.m. until 11 p.m., just an hour before this program, every week doing wonderful radio theater. And before her, of course, Kelvin and Jason, jazz plus blues equals snow and ice. Tech Radio. Before those guys, Jeff Wheeler starts things off every Monday with Uncommon Light, 3 to 5 p.m., wonderful radio on KOPN. It's good to be a part of it. And thanks to everybody who listens and who's listening tonight, all right? If you heard the program last week, thanks for joining in. Big thank you to Kent Stedman, my good friend from cyberspaceorbit.com. What a great time for Kent to be on the program with that amazing comet flying by. And, of course, when comets are flying by, Kent Stedman's one of the people that I like to be talking to because he watches it closer than anyone out there that I know. And anyway, he does a great job of following this stuff on his site as well. So, anyway, thanks for Kent for being on the program last weekend. It was great. I hope you heard it. We also heard some tunes from Sam and Anna DiAgostino. And wonderful live music in the studio here, mixing in with some other stuff that we've heard over the last few months. If you missed it, it's all on the web, www.mikehagan.com, in the program archives. And, well, that's the way to do it. Okay, tonight we'll be joined by our good friends, Star Newland and Dr. Michael Heisen, the wonderful proprietors of the Sirius Institute in Pune, Hawaii. Have their fingers in many pies these days, though. Lots to talk about tonight with Michael and Star. So stick around. We got that in just about, I don't know, 50 minutes or so. Star Newland and Dr. Michael Heisen. You can check them out as well on the web at Planet Pune, PlanetPuna.com, planetpuna.com. And we'll have them in just a few minutes, okay? Let's see. What else? Other than the fact that my microphone is hitting me in the glasses now, I must have to tighten some bolts or wing nuts or something like that. There it goes again. The music. Ah, yes. Void's Anatomy. It's a one-woman show, basically, from Quebec, Canada. Her name is Marie Georges, and she's great, I think. And as I said, she's from up north in Quebec. And we started things off there with a song called Dots and Dirt. And then we jumped to another song called Something Else. And neither one of them played very well. So hopefully we have better luck throughout the program with the music from Void's Anatomy. It was playing fine this afternoon when I was checking it out. So I don't know if it's a problem with the player or with my little jump drive here or whatever. But if not, we'll manage. And in fact, I'm going to try again here. But I'm also going to get some other music here in the back, in the on-deck circle, I guess I should say, in case it doesn't work. So, all right, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. Obviously, I have a couple things to work out here in the studio, so I'll try to do that. We'll try some more music here from Void's Anatomy. If it doesn't work, I'll do something else in a few minutes, okay? All right. Back in a few, it's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
I have no say when it starts falling again, light burning your eyes, blinding us on its way, and falling again. I have no say when the sun comes up again, light climbing up walls, wrapping us on its way, and shining again.
What life means to
reach
me.
Every step forward is closer to the end. just dying. Dressing up nice for an all-night binge. Every step forward is closer to the end.
That's a song called Closer to the End. The band is called Cross-Eyed. Some friends of mine from the Pacific Northwest. Thanks for the bailout. All right. Void's Anatomy. I can't do them justice. So I'm not going to play anymore because for whatever reason, whether it's my fault or the computer situation or whatever, the music's too nice to have it jumping around like that. So I'll just sort of improv for the rest of the show. I got plenty of stuff to fish from. We'll just play a mix of some stuff that we've heard over the last year or so, okay? And sorry to Marie, I'll make it up to you, all right? Okay, tonight, like I said, Star Newland, Dr. Michael Heisen, the Sirius Institute, wonderful researchers of dolphins and whales, language, communication, intelligence, amazing stuff we'll be talking about with Dr. Heisen and Star. Michael's been working on a lot of different stuff, though, as well. He's been doing some work with Nassim Haramein, the theoretical physicist over there at the Resonance Project, who's basically, you know, claims a unified field theory and is trying to implement it. So Michael's doing some work with him, and we know he met with Dennis McKenna last week. That's probably an interesting story, what happened with them. So we got lots to talk about with Michael and Star. That's coming up in at about quarter till, actually. We're going to start the interview a little bit earlier than we normally do. We'll take another break here in about 10 or 15 minutes, and I'll get them on the phone, and then we'll start things off at about quarter to 12 with Dr. Heisen and Star. We have a little something special that Star wanted to do at midnight, so we'll start a little bit early with them tonight, okay? Okay, what else? Well, I'll say hello to everybody listening tonight over the web or the traditional airwaves on KOPN or through the wonderful people over there at CosmicWavesRadio.com. Thanks to everybody who makes it happen for us. I appreciate it. Thanks as well to Larry, the wonderful web wizard, as always doing great stuff on the web. lots of neat stuff that he's doing over the last few days. He's always on the edge of the latest breaking technology, and it's funny, he'll call me or send me an email and say, check this out or whatever, and he'll send me like a test page of, you know, something that's not accessible to the public yet, but just stuff that he's working on. And it's always, it just blows my mind, you know, how the real cutting edge web stuff is developing and how quickly it's developing. It's just amazing what's happening out there. So anyway, really cool stuff. And Larry, thank you so much for doing it. We got a great bunch of music that's been coming in over the last few weeks. One of those selections was going to be played tonight, Void's Anatomy, but we've got good stuff for the next few weeks as well. If you're interested in any of this stuff, go check us out on the web at www.mikehagan.com. There's lots of people that are sending in music and artwork and poetry and opinions and whatnot, and we've got a place for all this stuff up there on the web, and we're doing our best to share it with other people, because that's what I sort of think that the internet is for, among other things, you know. You can trivialize it all you want and, you know, say it's being used to peddle pornography or, you know, mainstream silliness or whatever, but, you know, it's also a great way to find like-minded people and to, you know, network with others who are interested in the same things that you are. So that's what we're trying to do here, and share the stuff with the people who, you know, want to share back with us, okay? So on the web, like I say, mikehagan.com, check it out and let me know what you think. You'll have access to everything that we're doing. There's no fees or funny business like that, so just go check it out, all right? Also, there is a live chat that is up and active every Monday during the show. You can access that right from the front page there, so if you're interested in getting involved with the program online with other people who are listening and talking amongst themselves at the same time, you can do that in the chat room. And one of my favorite parts of the website is the forum, the sort of bulletin board part of the website where all kinds of interesting stories get posted all the time and people then discuss, debate, laugh, argue, whatever about them. Great place for breaking news and a great place to post stuff that you're interested in, you know, both for your own benefit and for that of others, and also a great place to archive things for historical purposes. You know, if you got a story that you think, man, I hope, you know, you don't want to forget about it or something, and you think, well, where can I put that? Just go post it on the forum. I promise I'll keep the forum up as long as I'm breathing, and you'll always have a place to go look for your material that you're searching for, okay? I encourage our guests as well as listeners to join us over there in the chat in the forum, all right? Okay, a couple things here before we take another break. OrbitRadio@AOL.com, that's my email address, OrbitRadio@AOL.com. On the web, as I said, MikeHagan.com. The phone number here in the studio is 1-800-895-5676. If you want to give me a call during a break, I'd be glad to say hi. And if Michael and Star want to take some calls later on, we'll take some local and regional calls if they're up for it toward the end of the program, okay? Let's see. Upcoming guests. Tonight, as I said, Star Newland and Dr. Michael Heisen. If you're not familiar with them, they are dolphin and whale researchers that work out of a base in the Big Island or on the Big Island of Hawaii on the Puna Coast. Michael is a Ph.D. neurobiologist and marine biologist. He's worked for NASA, JPL, been all over the place. He's actually been in space himself. And he has a lot of interest in space travel. And we'll be talking a lot about that with Michael, but he also has a tremendous interest in dolphins and whales, which has been the main focus of his career for a long, long time. So anyway, interesting people doing some pretty trippy work, so we'll talk with them in about 25 minutes or so, all right? Let's see, next week, Jonathan Zapp. I wanted to have John Zapp back on the program. We'll talk about, I'm not sure exactly, you know, you can talk about a lot of different things with Jonathan. So, I don't know, the 2012 thing for sure, maybe a little bit about Jungian psychology. He knows a lot about Carl Jung, and I've always liked Carl Jung, so I'm going to try to talk about some Jungian ideas with Jonathan Zapp. We've got John J. Harper, the author of Shamans of the 21st Century, coming on the 5th of February, and on the 12th of February, the amazing visionary artist Paul Laffoley You know, for the people out there that enjoyed the show with Alex Gray, man, you're going to love Paul Laffley. Amazing, amazing artist who does extremely sophisticated work and has been for many, many years. And, you know, he's considered a master for sure. And, you know, he shows at all the big galleries and all that stuff. But beyond that, you know, there are a lot of people that show at the galleries that suck. Laffley's, you know, he's the real deal and absolutely stunning artist. And of course, that's just my opinion, you know, from a personal perspective. So anyway, great stuff with Paul Laffley, and I've got some great accompanying music for that show as well, if I can get it to play. Judith Ann Brown, the daughter of John Marco Allegro. We'll have the interview I did with Judith just a couple of days ago. We'll have that on the 19th of February. We've got Ralph Metzner coming up. John Sheliak. I got the coolest email from Dr. John Sheliak a couple days ago. You know, Sheliak is a nuclear physicist and a PhD mathematician, but he's also the guy that put Terence McKenna's novelty theory, the mathematical side of it, on firm mathematical ground. This is the guy, John Sheliak. And I'm so excited that he's going to be on the program. He's sort of coming out of the woodwork. He was hidden out a little bit for a while, and he's got a new website, and he's now starting to talk a little bit more about the time wave and further research that he's done on it. But anyway, John Sheliak actually got in touch with me, and I'm so excited about it. So we'll have him at some time in the reasonable future, or the reasonably near future, I should say, and I'm excited about it. For those who aren't familiar with novelty theory or what I'm talking about, novelty theory is something that was a notion, essentially, that was whipped up by my friend Terence McKenna back in the early 1970s. And it was basically an attempt, novelty theory basically attempts to predict the ebb and flow of novelty in the universe as a quality of time. It involves things like or morphogenetic theory that like Rupert Sheldrake talks about, eschatology, a word that you know you don't hear very often anymore. But novelty in the context that Terence talked about could be thought of as sort of newness, you know, or maybe density of connectedness, complexification, you know, higher states of order coming out of lower states of order. That's what Terence would have called novelty. And the opposite of novelty was something that he called habit, and that was sort of, you know, status quo, that sort of thing. So anyway, when novelty is graphed over time, you get a fractal waveform, and, you know, it looks sort of like a stock market graph. And when novelty is increasing, you know, it shows so on the graph, and when novelty is in recession and habit is holding sway, then you see that on the graph. But for a long time, it was seen pretty much from the perspective of, you know, peer-reviewed science as pseudoscience, and you know, that lacked any credible basis. And again, this is something that Terence McKenna dreamed up from studying the I Ching, which is this ancient Chinese divination tool, essentially, one of the oldest books on the planet, you know, 5,000-6,000 years old for sure, a very old book. But the I Ching is a fascinating book in and of itself, the Book of Changes, so it's called. But anyway, Terence, with some prompting from a friend, looked into the I Ching and was able to pull out this mathematical formula out of it that eventually became novelty theory. And long story short, even though it's been long already, some professional mathematicians hammered him and said, no, you blew it here, you blew it there, you made a mistake here. And, you know, Terence wasn't a mathematician by any means, although he did a hell of a job of faking it. When it came down to the real meat of it, you know, there were certain things that he did wrong. It's very complicated stuff. Well, anyway, in comes John Sheliak. Dr. John Sheliak, and he says, yeah, well, Watkins is right. You did mess up here, and you did mess up here. However, if we correct here, and we correct here, well, now we have a working theory. Your mistakes weren't critical. And Sheliak literally brought novelty theory and the time wave onto firm mathematical ground, so it could be debated then amongst, you know, peers without being snubbed. And, you know, when something like that happens and people still don't want to talk about it, it basically just gets ignored. They no longer will pick on the people that are doing it, but they'll just ignore it. It happens, you know, in not only in physics and in mathematics, it happens all across the board. But at any rate, that's what's basically happened. Since Shelyak came out, you know, Shelyak, John Shelyak's a very respected person in that, you know, in that circle. And so when he came out in support of Terence, you know, there was really no more arguing about the mathematical side of it, so people just said, well, we'll just ignore it now, not pay any attention. But anyway, John Shelyak back on the radar, and I'm sorry, I don't have his website. It's sort of, he hasn't got the URL that he wants yet, and he's sort of using a backup one right now, but he's still under construction. But you're going to see more from John Shelyak, and he'll be on the program sometime soon. I'm really excited about it, okay? All right, for the conspiracy-minded people, Eric John Phelps, the Vatican Assassins author, and we'll talk about the Jesuits and how they're running the world. What else we have? Dr. Roland Griffiths. I've sort of given up on Dr. Griffiths. Jim Beard, my friend, Lakota Elder, and one of my great teachers, Patrick Flanagan. Anyway, lots of great stuff coming up, and I hope you'll all be joining us, all right? Okay, I'm going to take a break here, play another piece of music. I'm going to get Dr. Heisen and Star on the telefono, and then we'll come back and do a couple more things before we join them, all right? It's Mike. You listen to Radio Orbit, KOPN, Columbia, 89.5 FM, and this is a song called Exodus Damage.
Much more. I've got Exodus damage bleed. Could not commit some things I'll never be. So now we're talking about this. I'm starting to lose my confidence, and no one ever says a word about so much that happens in the world. I'm not sick enough to guess. Dance, dance, revolution. All we're gonna get, unless it falls apart. So I say go. Thank you.
They have it, Exodus Damage, on KOPN Radio Orbit. It's Mike, you're listening to it, and about 11:35 now in the PM on the 22nd of January 2007. Can you believe it? All right, announcements. Before we get to Michael and Star, what do we got, 10 or 12 minutes or so here? Last week, you know, I was too busy talking about people that have been dead for 100 years, and I forgot about one who just passed a couple weeks ago, Robert Anton Wilson, R.A.W., as he was known, Raw, died on the 11th of January, 2007. He was a novelist, great writer, a philosopher, a psychologist, futurist for sure. Some might call him a conspiracy theory researcher. I wouldn't. But anyway, he was an amazing guy. He wrote with a great sense of humor and optimism, but also, you know, could show the other side of things as well. He had a great, I don't know. I want to say his library, but I guess just the collection of books and things that he wrote were just outrageous. My favorite, I guess, would be Prometheus Rising. But the Illuminatus trilogy was amazing. Cosmic Trigger was wonderful. Cosmic Trigger 1 and 2. But he was wonderful, and Godspeed to Robert Anton Wilson. He wrote an amazing thing on his blog on the 6th of January, just a few days before he died. And he said that according to several medical authorities, he was likely to only have between 2 days and 2 months left to live. And he closed out the message on his blog with, quote, "Please pardon my levity. I don't see how to take death seriously. It seems absurd." And he died 5 days later. So, anyway, Robert Anton Wilson. If you're not familiar with this material, you might check it out, okay? All right, one other wonderful person of note this week, Grandfather Wallace, Black Elk. And you may or may not have heard me talk about Wallace before, but he was a wonderful Lakota medicine man, a shaman, and a friend of mine who I was fortunate enough to spend some time with in the years between 2000 and 2002. Grandfather Wallace joined the ancestors back in 2004, just about 3 years ago. In fact, it'll be 3 years this coming Wednesday, January 25th. And he was an amazing man and someone who I'm very fortunate to have called, you know, my grandfather. And he wrote a book that was called Black Elk, The Sacred Ways of a Lakota. And I think I'm going to read just a little bit out of it for you because it means a lot to me and Wallace meant a lot to me. And I got a couple minutes to do it here. So I'll read a few minutes just out of Wallace's book. Again, this is called Black Elk, The Sacred Ways of a Lakota. Wallace Black Elk, not Nicholas Black Elk, although they are related. They say that at one time we were civilized and educated. My grandfather told me that. They say we could talk to the trees and all the green. They say we could talk to the winged people, the four-legged creeping crawlers, mammals, and the fish people. They say that at one time we could all talk to each other. No matter how many countless languages, forms, and shapes, and symbols there were, they say we all spoke the same mind. That is called civilized or educated. Well, we kind of drifted away from there and drifted over here. Now we call ourselves the civilized, Christianized world. But we just formed a little world all of our own. Then we got ourselves caught over here without spirit, and we ended up with zero. If you see a tree, it doesn't move. It doesn't talk or walk. You just see it. You just see a tree, that's all. But the trees talk. They have a language of their own. So all this green that you see, they communicate. As with each one of the winged people, they have a song. It's the same with the four-legged and the creeping, crawly creatures. So that's how come we have an eagle song, a buffalo song, and even a serpent song, a serpent language. And it is there for those mammals and fish people also. So recently the scientists discovered that the whale also sings. They listened to see if they had a language, and they had a sing-song. So every creature has a song, every two-legged spirit, and each one of the thunder beings has a song. Even the spider that we call Iktomi. He walks, he rolls, he flies, and he sings a song. So we have medicine songs for that spider, Iktomi songs. So I want to tell you that you have a lot to learn. What you know today, it's just a little bit, like the blink of an eye. So the power is immense. Today in Webster's Dictionary, in the whole English language, look for the word Indian. Webster never defined what the Indian means. It only gave primitive people of North America. That's all. So the definition of earth people goes much deeper. It goes back to the fire and the rock and the water and the green. So that definition goes much deeper. So we are the real true earth people, the sacred mystery people of Turtle Island. And so there will be a time when people will understand who we really are. Really who we are. And I think all races of people are going to find themselves as earth people. Then it will come to one understanding again. And that is my goal, to define who we are. Wallace Black Elk, here's to you, my grandfather. You helped me see who I was, for sure. And this show tonight is dedicated to you. I love you, Grandfather Wallace. Wambli Chikala. Little Eagle. Thank you so much for everything you gave to us. This was a medicine man, people. In the true sense of the word medicine. This is no Eli Lilly, Pfizer, Merck medicine man. This was the real deal. An earth medicine man. So thank you, Grandpa Wallace, for everything you taught me. And for everything you continue to teach me. Thank you. May the ancestors hold you in their hands and in their hearts.
Serving the road in an old tar paper shack on the south side of the town, on the wrong side of the tracks. Sometimes on the way into town we'd say, Mama, can we stop and give her a ride? Sometimes we did, but her hands flew from her side. While I'd crazy Mary, down a long dirt road past the Parsons place, the old blue car to race, little country store with a sign tacked to the side, said no L-O-I-T-E-R-I-N-G-A loud. Underneath that sign always congregated quite a crowd. Take a bottle, drink it down, pass it around. Take a bottle, drink it down, pass it around. I take a bottle, drink it down, pass it, pass it, pass it around. One a cracked mercy backed outside her windowsill. Dreamed I was flying high above the trees, over the hills, looked down into the house of Mary. Terrible poem, newspaper covered walls, and Mary rising up above it all. Followed them around, over the curve, through the fields, into the house of Mary. That what you fear the most could meet you halfway. That what you fear the most could meet you halfway. Take a bottle, take it down. Around. Take a bottle, drink it down, pass it down, pass it around. Take a bottle, drink it down, pass it down, pass it around.
Little Pearl Jam there. That's Crazy Mary from a soundtrack. Actually, it was a benefit for Victoria Williams, the sister of Lucinda Williams, actually. Wonderful singer-songwriter. But anyway, her sister died, and they did a benefit for her. And they covered a bunch of songs that she wrote, that Victoria Williams wrote. And that was one of them there, performed by Eddie Vedder and company. All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia. This program is brought to you by listener support and a donation from the professional counselor, marital and family therapist, Betty A. Cree. Ms. A. Cree counsels individuals, couples, and children. She also works on anxiety issues, depression, and trauma. Her practice is devoted to aiding people to heal from old wounds that are getting in the way of their present lives. Information on services available at 573-256-2914. Okay, we're going to skip space weather. There's only one thing to be talking about as far as space weather anyway, and that is Comet 2006 P1 McNaught. Man, check out Kent Stedman's website, cyberspaceorbit.com. I don't know if it's Quetzalcoatl or Ezekiel's Wheel or Planet X. I don't know, but it's just stunning. this comet has been outrageous, no matter whether it's been spoken about in the mainstream or not. That's probably why it hasn't been spoken about. Just absolutely remarkable. And Kent has been all over it for the last 3 weeks. So great work by Kent Stedman, as always. All right, the news, we'll have to pass on that. We've got all these updates on the website always. If you want to go see some recent news and all that stuff, just go to MikeHagan.com and scroll down the front page there, and you can also find some very interesting stuff on the forum all the time, okay? Okay, so without further delay, we will get to our guests of the evening, the wonderful Star Newland and Dr. Michael Heisen from the Sirius Institute in Puna, Hawaii. They're great friends of the program and great friends of mine as well, and I'm very excited to have them back, as I always am. So if you're not familiar with who they are, go back in the archives and check them out. You can find them also on the web at Planet Puna, PlanetPunaPUNA.com. But your best bet is just to listen in right now. Hello, aloha, Star and Michael. How are you?
Aloha, Michael.
Aloha, Michael.
We're fabulous.
You sound fabulous.
Thank you, yes. First, I just want to say in listening to the last several minutes that a heart goes out to you for the passing of your grandpa, the great Wallace Black Elk, and also that Robert Anton Wilson is the reason, at least in that way, that Michael and I got together when Robert brought Michael to John Lilly's 75th birthday party.
Is that right?
In Malibu,
yeah.
And that's where I was living with John and my baby Ariel, and then in comes Robert with Michael in tow, and I'll let Michael tell you the rest of that story.
Oh,
but
my God.
Our hearts and our prayers and a dolphin escort for Grandpa.
All right, thank you very much.
So thanks. So here's Michael.
All right. I love all of Robert's work, of course, and I'm sad that he's gone. He was a really wonderful guy, and he opened up my mind to all kinds of things. He was just a wonderful author. One day I was talking with Will Block at LifeEnhancement.com, and somehow Robert came up in conversation, and I said, oh, can you know how to get in touch with him? He said, sure, I got his phone number. Can you call? Sure, go ahead, call. So I called him and went down to see him and his wife, Arlen, who told us many stories, but one of the fascinating ones was her last public demonstration was Druids for Dolphins.
Really?
They got dressed up as Druids and carried these signs, like Druids for Dolphins. About one-third went, huh? And about one-third sort of booed or something. And then a third just cheered.
Yeah.
So, it was a lot of fun.
That's
anyway,
great.
So Robert later invited me up to John Lilly's birthday party, and here we are, and I'm in Robert's car, and we turn right on Decker Canyon Road to go up to John's house, and it says Decker Canyon Road, Route 23.
Amazing. Yeah, he had that the 5-2-3 connection that he made in many of his books.
Yes, and the 2-3s came up all over the Sirius material.
Huh, that's right. He wrote a lot about that. That's amazing. Remarkable, Michael.
And then I meet John and then get into the party and Star and Tiger in one of the back trailers, and that's how all the
motorhome.
Motorhome.
And the rest, as they say,
our story.
Yeah, there we go.
You know, I'll say one more thing about Robert Anton Wilson. You know, he wrote a lot of wonderful things, but there's one phrase that or statement that he made that has always stuck with me, and he said that reality should be defined as a plot run by a powerful group of closely knit insiders. You and your friends, of course.
Sounds like
right, and I've always loved that because it was like, you know, anything else is a loser's scenario, and that's basically what he said. You know, you can run it, you can do your thing, and I just love that about him. So
that's great. I told him a number of dolphin stories and so on, and I said, "Well, what do you think?" And he said, "Well, I'm skeptical of all reality tunnels, including my own."
Yeah, he was the. He always said to never believe anything 100% and never discount anything 100%. He always left the door open and closed at the same time.
That's the Schrodinger, what?
Oh, the Schrodinger cat.
That's right, yeah. The paradox, you know. Well, hey, all right, you guys, let's get back to Hawaii and back to you all. Thank you so much for being on the program, as always. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to speaking with you all tonight. So We've got 6 minutes, Star, before midnight, and we move from 1:22:07 to 1:23:07. And that's...
Zero, Michael.
That's right. That's right. 07.
Yes.
And that's sort of a special time for you and for us, so why don't you talk a little bit about that before we get to the hour.
To the magic moment. Well, for a number of years, because also Robert Anton Wilson and my own connection with Sirius and the number 23, the date 1-2-3, the 23rd day of January, has been like one of my favorite fun numbers. It tickles me somewhere. It's like 1-2-3 jump. You know how you do that when you're a kid. 1-2-3 jump. So working with like parallel realities and things like that, I was inspired, especially for our show last year, to do a 1-2-3 jump over to a parallel reality that's more to our liking. Because what we know in consciousness, of course, is that as you think, so it is, and the more you think upon this or dwell upon this, the more you create it and all these other kinds of things. So this is just a fun kind of way of helping us start practicing, getting used to what it's like to create life and reality the way we want it to be. So 1-2-3-0-7 jump, which we're going to do in like 5.5 minutes or so now, I'd like people to spend the next few minutes thinking about some things they'd like to have different personally in their own life, different relationships they might want to have, being light enough to move over into a different kind of reality. So that means, what kinds of things would people let go of if they just had to like let go of stuff so that they could just travel lightly into a higher paradigm, into something that is more responsive to us, for example. So maybe your audience, the audience, can take a few moments to just like think, yeah, well, you know, I've got all that stuff in my closet, or I have all these old thought forms about being worried about getting sick, about losing my job or whatever, but you know, those thought forms create the experience, so people can go to zero about, like, I zero want to be sick again this year, or I zero want to get stuck in that job, and go to, like, I want to be well this year, I want a better job, or better yet, I want to do what I'm really here to do for life, you know?
Right.
It's a liberation kind of day. We're jumping into more of what we want and more the way we want it to be, because it seems to me, in reading and researching and just being alive in these days, I sense that the most important thing we can do is be real. The most important thing we can do is be true to ourselves, just like we talked another time, you and I, Mike, about to thine own self be true, and it shall follow as night unto day, that all others shall be true unto us.
I love that.
Yes, me too, because it's true, and it feels so, because, and that's what it's about. It's about us being able to feel what's true for us, you know, and we can look at those, the people out on the public facades out there, you know, going on and on about their thing. But, you know, they're so often out of touch with what's really happening that we really need to go inside ourselves and access for ourselves what's really happening and find other people like ourselves that we can relate to, that we can agree that, yeah, we would rather have this kind of life than that. Yes, we would rather make sure our kids are well-educated and prepared for life by educating them ourselves, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yes, we'd rather know about God by our own direct experience. You know, what a novel concept. It's so novel that millions have died trying to attain it, really.
Right.
So it's time for us to, like, be conscious, be clear, be compassionate, forgiving, and accepting all the things that we want from within ourselves we have to give to ourselves. And then we can radiate that to the world around us, creating more of that in the world around us. So this 1-2-3 jump meditation is going to take us into that world where, you know, we've all done a lot of processing and analyzing and getting in touch with this and that and everything. And I feel like it's time now to be still with it and just put it to rest and let it go and then jump.
All right, we're going to do it in 1 minute and 1 second.
Sweet.
So, Michael, We've got lots to talk about tonight as well, so don't think we've forgotten about you over there. We'll do our jump, and then I've got a lot of things I wanted to talk to with you, and I've got a bunch of questions that have been coming in from email for both of you for the last couple, 3 days. So, we've got lots to talk about.
Great. Well, I'm out here in the lanai of my friend's home, our friend's home, Jacob and Laurie Teitelbaum, whom we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm overlooking the ocean here and overlooking the new moon and the beautiful sky here in paradise.
Wow, I
know.
So, we're
making our transition now, and we're all looking out into a world that's vastly more beautiful because it is what we project out there. So when we can see that beauty in ourselves, then, of course, we can see it around us. So in forgiveness and acceptance
Four,
and self-loving.
Four, three, two.
Let's do
one,
two,
three. Jump.
Yes!
All right, we did it. Now we're going to jump into a little break here. We'll have a lovely piece of music, and then we'll jump into our conversation in our new world, okay?
Oh, yes. You're awesome, Mike. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Wonderful stuff. Star Newland, Dr. Michael Heisen. Back in just a minute. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM.
You did what you set out to do. not prepared. You really had me going there for a minute or two. You said you made me scared too. I wasn't sure I was getting through. I've gotta go. It's been a pleasure doing business with you.
Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It's Mike Hagan. You're listening to it here. Program support for KOPN comes from Colors. Colors is an educational organization made up of local independent businesses, community organizations, and citizen members. They'd like you to know that shopping locally helps to preserve community character. Information is available at colorsalliance.org. Colors dollars participants for the upcoming fund drive will include Bambino's Italian Cafe, Thomas Verdot Violins, and Ragtag Cinema Cafe. All right, it is Mike, and it is Radio Orbit, and we'll get right back to our guest, Dr. Michael Heisen, star in Newland, talking to us live from a wonderful friend's place in Hawaii, on the Big Island. Star, Michael, hello.
Aloha.
Star, why don't you do that? Or Michael, tell us a little bit about where you are and who we have to thank for your appearance tonight.
We're in a wonderful house in Kailua Kona, up on the ridge a bit, so you can see the Pacific, and belongs to some good friends of ours, Jacob and Lori Teitelbaum. Dr. Jacob's an MD that's been a specialist in chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and pain control for many years. He's got a website at endfatigue.com, and he learned all this by firsthand because he had to fix himself. That's how he learned all this.
Wow.
And his wife, Lori, also does a wonderful technique called NAET, which eliminates allergies rather quickly by reprogramming the body. They're very knowledgeable people.
Man, I need to talk to her.
Yeah.
I went swimming with my son on Sunday, last Sunday, a week ago.
Uh-huh.
I've had the strangest winter. I've had all these weird, like, chronic, bizarro things come out. But I broke out, like, in this nasty rash. And my eyes were red for 7 days. I mean, like for the first few days.
Wow,
I mean,
where did
it was like really,
swimming?
Really bad. Oh, at like the local rec center, you know, that's associated with. And I mean, nobody else had any problem. I called to see, and like my son was with me. He's only 3 years old, and he was, you know, in the water and underwater and the whole bit, and he had no problem. And it was just unbelievable, though. And people would see my eyes, and it was like, thought I was some demon or something for the first couple of days. And then after a couple of days, then they just were walking at me and said, hey, man, you got to lay off the pipe.
It was obviously, you know, something else.
And I'm like, oh, God, you know. Anyway, so finally my eyes are back to normal. My skin is still sort of recovering. But, gosh, I've had, like, this weird stuff, and it seemed very allergic in nature. And I remember, Star, you telling me about her before, and now it's sort of coming back.
Yes, and plus, you know what? It sounds like maybe you got, I think what they call a chlorine shock. Maybe they had too much chlorine in the water. Because I went to a resort here a while back with a friend, and we had a pass for the night, and I got into the water in their pool, and I broke out really violently with hives, like extreme reaction to it.
Yeah.
That's because they had just shocked the water, like a short enough time before that there was just too much chlorine around. It was really
right.
Extreme reaction. So it could have been something like that, too, because Wow, well, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm glad you're better, though.
Yeah, just another one to add to the list. So.
Yeah, right.
You know, anyway, I know we all have our issues, so let's just move along, all right? Anyway, okay, so let's see. I'm trying to decide where we should go first. Star, there were a lot of questions from some of the lady listeners of the program that would like to know, and I'm sure we'll talk about this anyway, so maybe we start off talking about domestic harmony, because there were people that say, what's the status of the Domestic Harmony Project? And, well, there are other questions as well, but let's just start there maybe.
Well, that makes me so excited and happy. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, listeners. Well, because I just came back from Oahu, where the capital of our state is, and I was there for the opening of the legislature and to talk story and meet with legislators and their staff about domestic harmony awareness and our safe baby resolution. So as fortune and fate would have it, a reporter showed up in the public access room and wrote an article about, you know, the public access room and how much it is for an outer islander or a neighbor islander to make it to the capital to put that effort in to meet legislators and stuff. And she put a picture of me in the article, and she talked about me right off the bat, and it gave a lot of publicity to domestic harmony. Yes. So I feel like, maybe someone bigger than me has a plan for this.
Huh.
Of course, I know they do anyway. But we're part of it, and what I'm excited to report to the audience is that more people want to know more about domestic harmony. They've just, like, made up a choice somewhere. It's like when they see the bumper stickers or the proclamations or they hear about it, they say, wow, that sounds so neat. I want to know more. Or, good, I'm so tired of that, all that talk about domestic violence all the time. People are tired of it. So, of course, in our new reality, the 12307 jump one, you know, there's a lot more focus on domestic harmony, and it's really like the ultimate prevention, really, for so many of the ills that we have in our culture, in our families, in our neighborhoods, our towns, everywhere, is the tremendous focus on violence and the different things that happen because of that. So we can change that thought. We can make it something very different and much better, and it starts with us. And yeah, so we're having our first fundraiser concert February 25th from 4 till 8 in the afternoon at Uncle Mikey's in Hilo, Hawaii.
Is that with
for
the
anybody
Rowan?
Who wants to come, huh?
That's with the Rowan Brothers?
That's with the Rowan Brothers, yes. They're coming over for another rare, intimate afternoon with us. We're very fortunate they come to see us. But
have you talked to the guys have you talked to the guys and girls over at Cosmic Waves to stream the event?
We're getting to that this week. It's in the list of things that we have to get going with, but we are including it in our press release.
Great, great, great.
As we have that finalized, and, of course, Orbit Radio, too. Yeah, because harmony is like the key to so much in life. I can hardly repeat that enough, but when things are flowing the way we like it to be and we feel life is in harmony, well, then we're in a better mood. Everything we touch or come in contact with responds to that better mood, and pretty soon there's a lot more better feelings going on in the world, and we know that only one thing can exist in one place at one time, so far anyway. So if we have more good feelings and harmony within and then without, then there's less of the other stuff in the world. Kind of like kid physics, if you will, Mike.
Hey, I like it. That's my kind of work, you know.
It's actually from my book of Blonde Physics by Star, where she explains some of the complex things of the cosmos in language a blonde can understand. Oh, wait.
Michael's just biting
little
his
bitty
tongue.
Things can do, big things can do.
For example.
All right, well, good. It sounds like you're making progress, and
we are.
It's wonderful. And
we're also working on a little documentary for cable access and also for the Planet Puna website.
All right.
Interviewing people all about harmony. People have come to our events and performers in our skit and, you know, different concerts that we've done. Wonderful interview with our chief of police, and we'll get our mayor on it too and other people so that we can just talk up more the idea of what domestic harmony is and what it means and what it's really like to live and have more of that.
Star, when and how did this thing come into being? For people who are hearing this for the first time.
Oh, yes. Well, 6.5 years ago, a wonderful lady, Kathleen, picked me up while I was hitchhiking in Pohola with groceries. That's kind of like the rural life we have out here. And we talked story as, you know, who we are, what we do and stuff. And I asked her what she did, and she told me that she taught women about domestic violence from the homeless shelters over in Oahu. And I said, what? You teach people about domestic violence? You mean you teach them about domestic harmony, right? Because they already know about domestic violence. And then she just realized, like, yeah, I mean, like, yeah, we should be teaching about domestic harmony. So from there, we started with a children's poster contest our first year, and over the years, we've done the poster contest, we've had concerts, we've had various events like skits, and then we recently had Pahoa's, the Home of Domestic Harmony Awareness, event down at a nightclub Shaka's in Pahoa Town, and a couple of hundred people from the neighborhood and the community came and celebrated with us, which is a pretty good turnout, and heard awesome Hawaiian music with our friends Puna and Andy Diana Aki, and just wonderful Hawaiian harmonies. And, you know, people want, I just keep feeling people really want things to be better. They want more aloha in their lives, and this gives them an opportunity to have that, very simply, very basically. I'm really excited about it.
All right, and Michael, before we get to you, one more for Star, because she mentioned it already, the Safe Baby Resolution.
Very important, very important.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a while. I know a little bit about it, but again, for people who don't, let's talk about it.
Well, we have a version of it up on Planet Puna, Safe Baby Resolution. I'm working with Janelle Miranda from your state and a friend, Raju Bhatt, who's over in India right now, to get it in other states as well. But the Safe Baby Resolution really focuses on what's the most important thing around birth, the baby. Zero about the doctor's schedule or whether they want to come back to the hospital in an hour or three to help deliver the child. It's like about what's really best for the child. And in this resolution, we're asking the Department of Health and the state to take a look at the known factors that we're addressing, that we're bringing to their awareness, and make some kind of assessment, some kind of commitment at a policy level when we see the results, that will make an intention to help women have better, safer gestations and therefore better outcomes for birth, better outcomes for the babies and their life. And subsequently, of course, the better the outcome for each individual, the better the outcome for all of us.
Hmm. You know, it's funny. And by funny, I mean funny, strange, not funny, ha-ha.
Uh-huh.
But I was in Rockford, in Illinois, just this weekend. I mentioned it to you briefly earlier. And, Michael, this is very strange. But at any rate, I went home to see my family. My mother had sort of a strange and unfortunate incident happened to her a couple of weeks ago. At any rate, I went back there and to visit my folks, and my sister, who lives in Florida, also came up, and it was good. You know, we hadn't seen each other for quite some time, so I got together with Carol. And at any rate, one of the things that we talked about that came up in you know, the conversation during the weekend was limbic imprint and the problem of, maybe not the problem, but the phenomenon of you know, birth trauma, and how obviously we all have birth trauma to a certain extent, but, you know, sometimes it's obviously much more intense than other times. So, and my sister was one of these babies that had major, major birth trauma, right?
Mm-hmm.
And her daughter did as well. Her daughter, who's now 17 years old or so, and who was pulled out with forceps and had black eyes and the whole bit when she was born. Carol's having some trouble with her right now, you know, and I'm thinking as we're talking about all this, you know, I'm thinking limbic imprint and all this, and I talked to her a little bit about it, and she was really interested in it, and I thought, well, so many people would be, because it's healing just to even hear about it. I mean, just even hear about it's healing, you know.
Sure.
But anyway, she was fascinated and already wants to learn more about it. So.
Well, great. We would recommend she or anyone else in your audience listening to this. Go to planetpuna.com and go look up Elena Tonetti, ELENATONETTI.com, Birth Into Being. We have a 3-minute trailer of her video, Birth As We Know It, her latest one. And she was a guest on your show, of course, as well.
Right.
But Elena's work has to do with opening the limbic imprint and getting in touch with really the deeper foundation of love that accompanies everyone into Earth. And helps us to put whatever our experiences were prenatally, starting from before conception, really, to put them all in a broader context so that those experiences are able to be integrated as part of what happened rather than this was it.
Hmm.
And when people are able to do that and just be accepting of it and forgiving of it, a lot of the issues that come in response to that trauma are cleared. They're then brought into perspective, and then life is able to be more balanced, and the person's able to have more mobility and move forward in their lives and put this behind them. This is one of the things we can, you know, focus on for our new quantum world today,
right,
is that that we've put this aside. I mean, the truth is our parents, everyone comes, you know, with a plan as part of their soul's agenda, if you will. Everyone's here to experience the things we've created knowingly or consciously and otherwise. So it's like, give ourselves some latitude and a pat on the back for coming to really the most challenging world of them all.
Hmm.
We should be saying, my goodness, huzzahs, because it takes so much to be here. We're just remarkable that we even came. So when we can just put ourselves in that kind of perspective and just say yes, you know, it just makes it much easier to move on from here and then to really live the life that we're here to help create for ourselves and the whole world, so that the world can move through all these traumas that, you know, we're taking on at an archetypal level on behalf of the all.
Mm. On a practical level, what's the nature of the safe baby resolution? Is it something you're trying to implement in hospitals or with doctors or what?
Well, we want to gather the data so that we can make a clear pitch and make it some kind of bill, and that's for legislators to work on that languaging. But it's first of all to complete this study that shows that there are these influences, and now that we know for sure that this does that and that does that, and if you make this better, then that gets better, then we can start implementing policies that help these kinds of awarenesses become part of the public's mm-hmm. awareness, their mm-hmm. right to know as consumers of health services. They have a right to know they can be well as well. I think for the future of our state, I'm part of the Sustainability 2050 planning groups, that we need to look beyond how life has been till now into how we wish it to be, how we want it to be. And I feel like we're entitled to be well.
And here, I
starts with everything from, you know, the eggs and the sperm that we're all carrying now and what our grandmother put in that our mother got that we're now getting. It's important for us to be looking at these elements and making them part of our education for young girls and boys and just making it something that we know about and that we take seriously. So they're going to pass this resolution. We're going to get it through other states. We're going to have attention to domestic harmony practices. Again, there's so much focus on domestic violence, but the only thing that you can really say about that is that there's way more of it than ever before.
Hmm.
And, of course, where the mind goes, reality goes. That's why domestic harmony is a wonderful alternative, if you will, because now it's putting our attention to something that's yummier
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and encouraging other people to come to the yummier. So appropriate touch is important for the moms and the babies. It takes off excessive energies. It helps reduce the rate of children being molested when they've had appropriate touch so that their energy fields are clear. And people who have yucky energy fields will leave them alone because it's an energetic connection that molesters have with their victims and things. These are things that we've been discovering in our work and in our research that are important for us to apply now. So the resolution really asks us to identify all these things and start to apply them in some way. And it's dedicated to two of our sisters, two of our residents in East Hawaii, who both died at the hands of their domestic partners.
Hmm.
One while she was in her last month of pregnancy, and they kept her going until the baby was delivered, and then the other one who left a surviving child. And both cases, you know, we could apply prevention, but we have to start, you know, where it makes a difference how the baby's carried and whether the mother was treated well while she was carrying it. Then we can change that dynamic.
Right. You know, and so much of this stuff, Michael and Star, we've known about for 30, 40 years now.
At least.
You know, or, well, I mean, we forgot it a long time ago. We knew it for a couple million.
Mm-hmm.
We forgot it for a few hundred. And now we're getting some of it back, apparently. But good for you, Star. It's wonderful.
Thank you. And good for our legislators, too.
Yeah.
Who have open ears and open hearts and are our public servants here, and, you know.
Well, if not in Hawaii, where? I mean, if it's not going to start somewhere, how, I mean, how about starting it there in paradise where people,
yeah,
I'm hoping, have a better attitude than we have here in the middle of the country? So.
Well, yeah, we do. Well, when you live on an island in the middle of the ocean, we have to have aloha, as we saw right after those earthquakes we had and big storms, because, like, it's sort of like you can, like, go to Missouri, drive across the state line and get some help.
Well, I tell you, we're having wild weather here. I tell you, this comet is stirring things up, an amazing comet, this thing. But, you know me, I connect all this stuff to the weather. There's been amazing storms all over Europe in the last week and here in the States. But we've had outrageous, strange weather here in Missouri, all kinds of snow and ice and nastiness. But I love it. The nastier the winter, the better the spring is, you know.
Let's hope.
Yeah, let's hope, yeah.
Has anybody gotten the size on McNaught yet?
You know what, Michael? It's really interesting that you mentioned that, because it's nowhere. You can't find an official estimate from anyone on the size of that comet.
Right.
Nothing.
It's too big, and they don't want to scare
Well, it's weird. There was an initial thing that was put out by JPL when the comet was discovered,
right,
which was only back in, what, June or July of last year.
And hyperbolic pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, think about that. They only, well, I mean, officially at least, who knows? You know, you never really know when they spot these things or not. But at any rate, it was certainly a pretty amazing object, and no one is willing to either speculate or tell for real how big it was. Maybe they don't know. I don't know. Heck,
I doubt it.
The closest I've gotten is that the comet Neat was supposed to be about the perhaps the mass of Mercury, and this one's bigger. And at least one thing said that the coma on McNaught was 300,000 miles across.
Well, my God, have you seen any of those images from...
Oh, lots of them, thanks to your good buddy Ken.
How about it, huh?
Oh, beautiful.
Yes, it's the brightest thing they've ever seen.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, and Michael, to clarify for people, Michael just said that Neat was considered to be the mass of Mercury. Neat was a comet that went by in 2003, and it was also pretty stunning to see on the SOHO satellites and stuff, but this one was even more remarkable, I thought.
Yes, and it came right over the North Pole of the Sun and dove in halfway between Mercury and the Sun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, at least Neat pulled off a very large solar flare right after that.
Yeah, well, the Sun is acting up too, you know. As a matter of fact, in the last 2 days, a gigantic little... a group of sunspots just exploded out of nowhere, right?
We just saw that on the website there.
Yeah, right on the front side of the disc. So it's very strange the way these things interact. You know, I've never talked to anybody on the air about the so-called electric universe or the electric sort of model for, you know, galactic objects and this sort of thing. But it's a pretty interesting concept, and it sort of makes sense to me. And then you can sort of see how a cosmic interloper like a comet can come in and have a really serious, you know, reaction and cause reaction to the other bodies that it comes in contact
with.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. I'm sure there are some electrical effects. It's just hard for me to buy that they are such powerful things at such long range. But it could be. I mean, we do have a permanent lightning bolt between Jupiter and Io.
Right, right. Well, there seems to be some sort of interaction between those two for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you make of comets, Michael? Just your own personal position. Do you buy the old, just the icy, the dirty snowball theory, or do you think it's more than that? Yeah.
The way I thought of it is we have things out in the, what would they call it now, the Kuiper Belt.
The Kuiper Belt, yeah.
That are big and ancient and probably, I don't know, if they thought 90% ice. And inside that, there's going to be a core of dust and metal and everything else. And then as it falls in and goes around the sun many times, it gets cooked. And eventually it turns into something like an asteroid, say Phobos, 25% water. A lot of the water cooked off. And then finally something like Halley is about 40% stuff like oil shale.
Uh-huh.
So we boiled it down to dust, rock, tar, and ice, that sort of thing. So basically the more they cook, the drier they get.
Hmm.
So Neat and McNaught must be new ones, basically, according to that idea, that they still have a huge amount of mass. And on the other hand, it's possible it's a rogue rogue comet. I mean, sorry, a rogue planet.
Rogue planet, yeah.
Possibility. But in general, that seems to be what's going on with the comets. And then they can last a long time because the dust piles up into what they call super insulation. We were playing with that at Jet Propulsion Labs years ago.
Interesting. But well, it was a remarkable thing, no matter how you define it. I tell you, it was something else to see, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And who knows what? You know, there are more and more of these, it seems like.
Yeah, well, we're approaching the galactic equator.
That's for sure. Yeah.
And we're supposed to, as I understand it, we're supposed to cross the galactic equator about 2012, plus or minus 2 or 3 years. The thing is...
And this is different than the alignment that happens. I think. In other words, this isn't the 2012 alignment that John Jenkins and all those guys are talking about. That's a different thing than crossing the galactic equator, I think.
I thought it was the same. But in any case, we are crossing the galactic equator right about the time of the next predicted solar max. And the next predicted solar max is 30 to 50% hotter than the last one. They think it will be.
Yeah, even the mainstream guys are talking about that.
And so one thought is that there's lots of mass coming out of the galactic equator, dust and stuff that's falling into the sun and heating it up, along with the rest of the solar system.
Wow.
Well, NASA has now admitted liquid water on Mars, I believe.
They keep announcing
it every few months, so I get lost at exactly how far they've gone with their announcement.
They creep another inch every few
but
months.
But I think they've announced liquid water on Mars.
Wait till I find a McDonald's or a Starbucks.
That's great. Yeah, and they just might, you know. Well, anyway, even NASA's talking about water on Mars, and obviously there's, you know... Mike, I think that the next great sort of revelation in science is going to be that the universe is not a barrier to life.
Let's scope that. Who said that?
You know?
Whoever said that?
Who the hell said that? Somebody said it. Terrence said it. I know that.
Oh. Okay.
Zero a barrier to life, then.
Okay. Yeah.
I think of it more like it's an abode of life.
Right. Yeah. That you know, this idea that... it'll be a miracle if we find... The thing is, we've got this narrow vision of what life, you know, the parameters that have to be present in order for life to exist or whatever. But, I mean, it seems like, well, life could probably exist in any manner of different environments. Who knows how it might evolve, you know?
Look at the thermophiles, the extremophiles.
Right.
Things like that. They live in boiling sulfuric acid.
Right. And that's just on this world.
Yeah.
You know? And we got all kinds of different life forms just on this world.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem with alien, the whole alien problem, is not one of finding the alien. It's recognizing it when you got it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, my gosh.
Yes.
Well, I tell you what. We're at the bottom of the hour. Let's take a little break here, okay?
Okay.
We'll come back. We got lots more to talk about. And we will do it with much aloha with my good friends, Star Newland and Dr. Michael Heisen. Back in a minute, you two, okay?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, it's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM. It is about 12:35 in the AM now on 1/2/3/2007, and we will continue the musical mishap with a song by a young man named Mishka. And Star will like this one. It's called One Tree. It's Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
One tree.
All right, that's Mishka, One Tree, and this is Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia, 89.5 FM, about 1:37 now in the AM on Tuesday morning, the 23rd of January. And I've got my good friends Dr. Michael Heisen and Star Newland on the line with me from the Sirius Institute via a friend's pad this evening. And either way, from the Big Island of Hawaii, Michael and Star, hi, thanks.
Aloha.
Well, okay, let's see. I've got a few questions here that have sort of come in beforehand, Michael, that are addressed sort of to you, but we can address those now or a little bit later. What do you guys want to do? You want to talk about, you got anything on your docket there, Star? You want to make sure we talk about?
Well, I think we could answer those questions first and then go on to other things, because we'll always have lots to talk about, so let's give the audience a chance to be heard.
Okay, well, two things for Michael. I'm trying to decide which one to ask first, because the one he's not going to want to answer.
Maybe.
But
maybe I will then.
Maybe you will. All right, well, I'll just throw it out there, and you can tell us as much as you'd like, Michael. The word is out. So what is going on with the work you are participating in at the Resonance Project? You know, I made a vow a long time ago not to keep secrets. And so, you know, if you got a secret, I'm zero the guy to tell. Right? So whenever I hear somebody's doing something, I don't know what they're doing maybe, but I say, well, you know, I hear so-and-so is working with so-and-so, and I hear this is going on with that. And all of a sudden people say, well, what's going on? So anyway, so I'm just relaying the questions, and I'm curious, of course, myself. But anyway, as much as you'd like to share, Michael, you know, people know about Nassim, and it's zero that big of a secret. So let's just talk a little bit about that maybe.
Well, basically I've been thinking about his theories and such a lot.
Talk about Nassim a little bit so people who don't know him can get a little bit familiar at least with what is going on at all.
Okay, Nassim is working, or his group rather, is the Resonance Project, and you can get to their website at theresonanceproject.org. And among other things, he and his compatriot and associate Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher have come up with what is essentially a grand unified field theory, based on putting torque back into Einstein's field equations. And there's also the basic realization that the structure of space-time is tetrahedral. And between those two insights, they've got a metric of space. They've put torque back into the Einstein field equations, which essentially gets rid of the need for the strong force. It gets rid of the need for dark energy or dark matter. Because essentially, by the current formulations, they forgot torque. So that's why they're missing 95% of the universe in their theories right now. And by the time you put torque and Coriolis force and that sort of thing back in, you're able to describe most of the universe again, which is a major accomplishment.
Right.
And things like strong force become gravity, and then everything unifies. So we've been thinking about that a lot. Along those lines, take a look at planetpuna.com, and on the front there's just this art piece a friend of mine, Andrew, did, in which he put he just pasted the Sri Yantra Mandala on top of Jupiter. Just see if there's correlation for you there. But if you're thinking along Nassim's lines, there's order in the universe. It's described by things that he calls the U4 metric, and which is like two double toruses that are rotating together and so on like that.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start seeing these patterns, they show up everywhere. So I think that's what I can say so far. But things are going along very well.
So practical applications, though, I mean, are there?
Yes.
Like what, a new phone booth or a new pop can? Or?
Well, it depends on the time frame, I suppose. If you push it out to the limits, I think it'll make wheels and roads obsolete.
Okay. All right, fair enough. All right. Okay, another one for Dennis. I apologize for Michael about Dennis. I mentioned, and a lot of people saw the photos that Star gracefully sent to me a couple weeks ago when you met briefly with Dr. McKenna, with Dennis McKenna, and certainly people curious what you guys talked about.
Basically, I asked him about his theory about the state of consciousness writing the DNA. And he said, well, he had done that like 30 years ago, and he still believed it anymore. Although I have a biochemist friend who thinks it works. So we talked about that a bit. And then the other question that Ezro had a full answer for that I asked about was, there's this interesting story about the Grateful Dead in which they would take their musical gear and turn it up to the highest possible level and take a dB reading. And then one or more of them would use DMT, and all of a sudden the sound system would be louder. So it implies that something about the local space-time changes. And anyway, I was hoping he might have known more about that. But he was intrigued by the question.
You know, it's very interesting, Dennis, when it comes to those sorts of questions these days, you know. Mm-hmm. He's put a lot of that behind him, although I'm not sure exactly. You know, I'll Zero speak for him. But I ask him certain questions sometimes, too, that are, you know, pretty on the edge. Mm-hmm. And I sense that he sort of, you know, Zero wants to answer him, but at the same time he does, you know.
He's still a wonderful, he is a wonderful fellow.
And doing great work. I mean, the stuff he's doing.
Running this, I think, 12-day intensive on ethnobotany and pharmacology.
Mm-hmm.
And ethnopharmacology. He's an absolutely brilliant chemist, among other things.
Did you guys talk anything about what you are up to?
Yes, a little bit. We spoke about the cetacean commonwealth, and the interspecies birth cohort and our communications work with them and other things that Michael discussed before I got over to them.
All right. Okay.
Great fun.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad that, I mean, it's wonderful that you guys were able to sit down and talk. I think that's so cool. I love it.
It was really exciting to actually get to meet him.
Wow. Well, he thought wonderful things. He sent me a nice email and said, thanks, you know, for putting you guys in touch. He had a nice time talking with you and everything, so it's real cool.
Oh, thank you.
I'll have to forward that to you, just so you know I'm not lying to you.
Thank you.
Hey, one more thing here that I got an email that was posted on the forum. There's a story about a whale that ran into a boat off the coast of New Zealand, but the guy who ran the boat in a strange situation, the guy actually has some heart, thought that the whale made a mistake or did it on accident, and that the whale was sort of hanging around the boat and trying to say that he or she was sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Did you read the story?
Oh, we've yet to see that one.
I didn't see that particular one.
Yeah, it says, listen to this. It says, a sailor whose yacht was destroyed by a humpback whale off New Zealand said he got a good vibe from the giant mammal and thought it was trying to say sorry, local media said on Wednesday. Lindsay Wright was sailing his brand new 10-meter trimaran named Loose Goose when he hit the whale. Now, I don't know that this is the whale's fault, but at any rate, the guy was sleeping, and the whale's tail knocked a big hole in his boat. And he said, I wasn't upset. I got a good vibe off of him. I thought he was trying to say, sorry, mate, I didn't mean to.
That's really nice.
Yeah, it was a humpback.
Uh-huh.
Right? Anyway, so I love stories like this because, you know, it's sort of, usually you get the dumb animal thing, you know. And,
right.
But I thought that was great, so.
Well, it's interesting that you would say that because in terms of some of the things that we're working on, you know, the Cetacean Commonwealth
mm-hmm.
is a very big program that we're working on.
Talk about that a little bit, Star, for people who aren't familiar with what that is.
Uh-huh. Well, the Cetacean Commonwealth, we came up with it in Los Angeles in spring of 2002, and we introduced it to Earth Day in Los Angeles, which was pretty neat because we brought Hula there for the first time and all kinds of night things and whale songs and everything. And so, anyway, but the Cetacean Commonwealth is a group of people like ourselves, us and others, of course, who are acting and speaking on behalf of the dolphins and the whales to the best of our capacity, and also working towards the time that they are able to speak and act on their own behalf. So part of our work is to establish interspecies communications through a couple of programs, at least, actually more, including what Michael is working on. But one is the interspecies birth cohort, where human babies are born with dolphins and preferably dolphin babies. and they get to spend lots of time together and be raised together and establish communications with each other, which naturally happen. And then there are translators and ambassadors, and so are those their counterparts back to their own people. This is really bringing up the idea that they are a people, they are a culture, they are a civilization, they are ancient. Michael can talk about how they are our ancestors from that neurobiological point of view that's become so prevalent recently. And anyway, I lost my train of thought for a second.
So the upshot is that we can present them before the UN in the year of the dolphin.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Michael.
And declare that it's time that they be treated like the sentient beings they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have sonar, if you will, as a tool. They have language. They have intelligence. They have self-awareness.
They have culture.
They have pass-on culture. They have very long lifespans, et cetera, et cetera. Everything that we would attribute to a civilized, cultured, sentient being.
They sing songs.
And they sing songs.
And they teach them to each other.
My gosh, what else do you need?
Yeah.
Right, well, that's kind of our point. So to this end, the Cetacean Commonwealth is helping to establish that language translation, and then through music as a language interface that we can help make some kind of shared language through music as well.
Okay.
And so they'll be able to speak on their own behalf.
Well, this is another big question, Michael, from more than one person. What's going on with deciphering the dolphin language? I'm not sure if that's the best way to put it, but what's going on with the language work between the two of us?
Well, I know there's still people doing their best to analyze dolphinese. They've gotten up to the point where they have signature whistles, but they knew that about 40 years ago.
Right.
It's just been refined a bit. So, in a sense, we've made very little progress. On the other hand, the Russians had syntax for 300,000 vocalizations that showed that they did have a language, that it was an information-carrying channel. Start.
Well, the other thing, what I was starting to say about the Commonwealth, is that we have this attorney lady in Florida, Heather Gay, who's proposed that we gather, and we've actually started this with our video production, The Delphic Tradition Brought Forward, with Michael Kastenbaum, that we gather people's stories about their telepathic rapport with the different species that people have been experiencing, because there's definitely a strong trend towards people having various kinds of strong, quote, telepathic experiences and contacts with the dolphins and the whales.
Mm-hmm.
That lead to certain kinds of changes in the individual or certain kind of co-created activity or something like, you know, the whales sing the songs to the stars that we sent out.
Right.
Came through some kind of, like, inspired thoughts being exchanged between us and them. So
right.
Heather's suggesting that we get a document together in whatever format, in different formats, and present this to, like, National Marine Fisheries Service, NOAA, the Navy, people like that, the United Nations, through the Year of the Dolphin program, and just establish this body of material that, yes, there is communications, and this is how it is taking place. And these are some of the reasons why we feel that these other actions need to be considered and ultimately undertaken.
All right. Michael and Sarah, both of you, I want to ask you sort of a strange question, maybe.
Stranger?
Yeah. You know, I was reading Communication Between Man and Dolphin. This is one of John Lilly's earlier books, right? And there's a part in there where he's talking about language.
Mm-hmm.
And about how he had this sort of theory that over the millennia, as language, as the connection between man and nature became more and more separated, that human language got sort of put in a box, and for the longest, and now for millennium, we really have had no one else to talk to.
Yeah, the great aloneness, they call that.
Right, and so, and he basically used that as a springboard to describe why it's so difficult to communicate with other species, because maybe there was a time when we were capable of it, but we had lost it. And now had to regain the skill in doing it. And now I think about what Star says about, you know, communication between dolphins and whales and human beings, and sometimes through a telepathic connection. And I think this can happen between human beings and plants.
Yeah.
And and maybe other species for sure, and maybe it can happen between human beings and who knows what. I was thinking about a long time ago, before I really was sensitive to much of this stuff, I thought I was making a joke, but now I take it differently. Someone came to the door one day in my house asking about me to protect the dolphins from tuna fishing, mm-hmm. or something like this, right? And I said, well, what about the tuna?
Mm-hmm. Good point.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy just said, oh, I'll see you later. I'll talk to you later.
Well, you were right on a very important point.
But, you know, maybe we can talk to the tuna, too. I don't know. But, I mean, it just seems like we have so anthropocentrized
right.
everything that we've just cut off our connection to maybe everything. And maybe the dolphins are just one of the ones that are on the surface that are easier to talk to, you know?
Yes, I think that's at least partly right, yeah. Hmm. The shamans have been doing this with many power animals and plants for millennia. The solo comes to mind that was in John Mack's book, who could talk to rabbits.
Huh.
The free rabbits would come up and let him tickle behind their ears and things like that. He could talk to almost anything that way.
Strange. You know, you have certain people that are historically written about and certainly are real that actually had those sort of connections that were documented where they just had...
St. Francis, perhaps?
Yeah, it was where
a whole group of otters come out of the water and dry him.
Right.
Leaving him soaking wet.
Right. Francis of Assisi, sure.
Oh, yes.
And even some native stories, you know, about, you know, the relationship with the animals, that they can call them and they would come at will and this sort of thing.
Well, you're actually describing the original Paradise State, the legends of paradise and cultures throughout the world,
mm-hmm.
where there was communion and unity amongst all the peoples and all the species. And that was before the Tower of Babel came along and, like, separated us all through language. But I feel like our natural state is more in the telepathic realms.
Well, there was a time, for sure, I think. I read this thing from Grandfather Wallace earlier, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly the story of the Lakota and the, you know, the Plains Indians people and their story goes back thousands and thousands of years, and they talk about a time when, yeah, we were in direct communication with everything.
The star people, too.
Sure. Maybe where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
Could be.
And again, the whole comet thing comes to mind. Kent and I last week were talking about the whole panspermia theory, Michael, you know, and the idea that comets are these cosmic sperm that just spread,
oh, yeah.
you know, just spread life all around the cosmos.
Well, there's one rogue comet about every tenth of a light year, and Fred Hoyle and Wickram Singh showed that there were clouds miles and miles and miles across the bacteria in interstellar space. they showed all the prebiotic compounds were present in comets, and they did Evolution from Space as a book, and Diseases from Space, another book, and The Intelligent Universe, another one, and basically saying that the Earth got life as soon as it was cool enough to be seeded, because we're basically going through a cloud of it.
Yeah, we're just floating in it, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
And it reminds me of like the high altitude ecologies. There's actually a set of plants and algaes and everything else that blow around at the stratosphere level and played out on mountains. Start those ecologies.
Right. I mean, there are just rivers of water up there, apparently.
Yeah. But, you know, in a similar way, the Earth and Sun and solar system go through these clouds of bacteria and comets and spores and everything else. So it looks to me like it's life is spread everywhere.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love it. I love it. Well, maybe these days, one of these days, we'll get to visit with some of it. So,
I just wanted to mention the dolphin genetics. We have 23 pair of chromosomes. The dolphins have 22. The first 13 of the dolphins' chromosomes are identical to human chromosomes. I've yet to find out exactly which ones. And then the other 9, I believe, are rearrangements of the first 13. So in that strange sense, the dolphins are 100% human genetics.
Very strange. But what's the 23rd?
Well, we have an extra chromosome beyond theirs. I don't know which one you might want to call the 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
I've yet to get down to that level of detail with all this.
Right.
But I'll let you know.
It's interesting how such small variations in DNA can result in such large differentiations of organisms. I mean, we're very different than a dolphin.
Right. Have you read Darcy Thompson on Growth and Form?
No.
Darcy Wentworth Thompson on Growth and Form shows all these very simple transformations that get you from something that looks like a guppy to something that looks like a sunfish just by stretching the picture vertically. So he was convinced that there were overall global scaling genes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's correct. That's correct. They have been finding single genes that affect massive amounts of things.
Hmm.
So maybe just tweaking a few genes changes things massively.
Well, I would be inclined to believe something like that. I'm a huge believer in the butterfly effect, you know, that very small perturbations in any system can make gigantic effects, you know. Mm-hmm. So that seems to make sense to me, actually.
Yeah. it's probably too much to get into, but there's a theory by Susan Crockford about thyroid and how that affects everything.
About thyroid?
Yeah, thyroid patterns that vary diurnally, that are different, say, between a tropical animal and a polar bear,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing, just to give an example. And so she says the way these things get locked in is the basis of speciation. Long story short.
Wow.
So there are ways that we are mutable.
Hmm.
We're a lot more software-oriented than we thought.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah, that's for sure. Even I've made examples before on the program about how even a very short time ago in human history that we had such strange ways that, for example, 1,000 years ago, there was this guy, it was St. Augustine was his name, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, you know, he's considered a saint, obviously, in the Christian tradition, but one of the reasons he was considered such an amazing representative of God and the church was because he could read scripture silently.
He was for a long time
perhaps the only person in Europe who could read silently. Before that, everybody read speaking aloud. You had to read aloud, and no one ever even considered reading silently. And the way that he would prove his divinity was that he would go into the church and they would open up the scripture and let him gaze at the page, and then they would close it, and then he would tell them what it said, and they were all blown away because he could actually do it silently, right?
Yes.
And this is nothing but a behavioral thing, you know, and now we can't very few of us can imagine reading everything aloud. We all read silently.
Yes.
You know?
Good.
So yeah, I mean, it's just one of many examples of how, like you say, Mike, how mutable we are. And the consciousness, just like the physical form, maybe, huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. We should mention that they also found spindle cells in humans and humpbacks. Well, they found spindle cells in humpbacks.
What's that mean?
It's a particular kind of neuron that is more plentiful in the frontal lobes, so it has to do with thinking and consciousness and that sort of thing, personality. And they found it in the humpbacks. So they announced it as humpbacks have human cells. However, since the humpbacks have been around, it's humans have humpbacks.
There you go.
So do dolphins and the great apes.
Amazing.
So we share the dolphins, great apes, humans, humpbacks, all the cetacea share spindle cells as a common feature.
Amazing. All right, look, I'm a little bit past my break, okay?
Okie dokie.
Let's take it here. It's just a minute after 1 a.m. We've got the wonderful Star Newland and Michael Heisen with us, talking to us from Hawaii. They are on the web, and much information about them and the work that they're doing at www.planetpuna.com, planetpuna.com. You can always link there directly from my site as well. And we'll come back to them in just a few minutes here. But we'll play a song in the meantime. And I like this one, actually. I haven't had a chance to play it for a while. And since my music screwed up earlier, we'll indulge myself a little bit here. This one's called Not the Heartless Kind. Back in a minute. This is Mike. You're listening to Radio Orbit, KOPN Columbia.
What if I stack the cards with the ace next to my heart?
played out the game with a steady hand. What if I left the closet open, skeletons and all, invited in the press, leaving you to take the floor? What if I scratch below the surface and knock you open up the bricks?
It's called Not the Heartless Kind, and I should know the name of the girl who does it, but I don't. How's that for a radio host? Luckily, I know the names of my guests. They are Star Newland and Dr. Michael Heisen. And, and they're with us here from the lovely island of Hawaii, and we thank them and send them much aloha for being there with us tonight. So, all right, you guys, hi.
Hi.
What's next, Michael? Space travel.
Space travel.
We got to get out of here, dude.
Right. Well, even Hawking wants to go to space now.
Who wants to go?
Hawking.
Oh, really?
Hawking.
Stephen Hawking has finally caught the bug.
Wow.
After years, he now says we should go colonize space.
Man, maybe we should stay here.
Well, first we have to be dolphinized before we can go humanize space.
That's
we
true.
Have to re-access our natural state, like that dolphin consciousness.
Right, we got to get
and
nice.
Then,
yeah.
Then we can take ourselves out and beyond and be welcome guests in all these other worlds, you know?
Do you think that's part of what's happening, really?
I think
yes.
I mean, you think we're sort of being prepared to go to space?
Yes.
Well, yeah, the great diaspora, of course. But because the human species is a really remarkable creation, we're just, like, really awesome. We have wonderful talents and gifts and capabilities and minds and emotions and feelings and ranges of expression. We're just, like, one of the most complex creations of all creation, really, in physicality. So when we look at ourselves that way and that everyone has a lot of gifts to share, well, we could be really welcome guests all over the place.
Well, as Heinlein said, we just have to know how to eat pie with a fork and how to wipe our feet before we come inside. And then we'll be welcome.
A little more than that, actually, but yeah, I'll put the seat down. Yes.
I did read a good portion of John Mack's book, which is a very masterful book. I recommend it.
Who was John Mack for people who
John
know?
Mack was one of the chief psychiatrists at Harvard.
Right.
He won a Pulitzer Prize for a biography of Lawrence of Arabia called A Prince of Our Disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last part of his life, he became convinced of the consistency and worth of the stories of abduction, so-called. And so he collected many, many of those stories and helped people in a therapeutic way. And he seems reasonably convinced that something possibly extraterrestrial is going on, but he's very careful. But he does say, yes, these people have had very real and sometimes very traumatic experiences, and they should be listened to, and we should figure out what's going on,
mm-hmm.
that simple explanations fall apart,
right.
that something very real and very odd is going on. And he was very courageous to do that. Harvard almost fired him.
Yeah,
he lost his life. And a strange accident.
Yeah, some car went up on the sidewalk where he was walking and died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very just
it could be an accident, certainly, just very odd.
No question about it. That's zero question about it, I should say.
Good for you, Michael.
I'm learning. I actually correct myself on the air now, you see.
Well, actually, we could take a moment to just talk about language sculpting and why we're laughing.
You know, you can zero do it enough because you just have to pound it in, and it just has to become part of another routine, and we have to form it into habit, I guess, like any other habit.
Well, okay, let's sculpt that, Michael.
Well, wait a minute.
Okay, so, yes, in this new reality that we've jumped over to on January the 23rd, 2007, what we find is that, you know, it's natural for us to communicate in, let's say, the yummier mode in terms of, well, I'd like to make sure that I'm remembering to bring my boots in from outside rather than I'm not forgetting. Or I'd like to talk about things in terms of domestic harmony being in favor of that rather than against domestic violence. It's just about putting our reality on that flip, just that slight other shift we need to make it fall into place the way we want it to be. And it happens when we say what we want the way we want it. So, and instead of saying, I don't want this and I don't want that, we zero that out. Because zero just means the absence of something. It's just like a real thing. Either you have an orange or you have zero oranges. It's clear.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have zero pain in our lives because of a bad relationship, well, that's clear. Then we're at the zero point. Now we've gotten past that. And then we can say, well, now I want a really yummy relationship. I want a partner who's this and that. To me, all the good things that we want. And again, in our new world, let's put it that way to ourselves so that we can wake up and like, oh, yeah, maybe it is actually that person who lives down the street or that I see on the bus every day or whatever, but to be open and to looking for what we want in life, because then we'll see a whole new world out there for us. Which is what we jumped over to today, that whole new world.
Right.
So language sculpting is creating that coherent reality through the conscious use of language. And we feel better when we sculpt our words. And that's different than that we have to pound it into ourselves. It's just that it helps us to come into our feeling bodies because what we're communicating feels better to think and then to say and then to hear. So if I say, oh, yes, I really love it when, you know, the mail gets to me on time or something, rather than I hate it when the mail is late and everything gets screwed up, blah, blah. Then it was like, oh, yeah, I like it better when the mail gets there on time. And then, oh, yes, then it can get there on time. Simple things, but again, with our thoughts and our words, we're creating that new reality moment to moment. So we might as well create what we want.
Interesting. All right. Yeah, and it, it's a challenge, and it also it feels like brain exercising.
It is.
It is, because our brain got knotted up. I just saved off on the email this evening, coincidentally, because I've been looking for this technology for quite a while now. They're now in a position where they can map the origin of a single thought in the mind.
Whoa. That's exciting and freakishly scary at the same time.
Well,
we were doing something like that at Caltech years ago.
Yes.
There's nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, it's all familiar already anyway. But what I like to do is, because I feel really strongly that when we shift from a, I don't want that cop to give me a ticket tonight because I forgot my wallet at home or whatever, and then we come to that zero point, like, oh, I sure want that to happen too. I just want them to, like, leave me alone and let me drive home okay. I'm sure there's some kind of, like, what Nassim and Michael would call a quantum flux that takes place as we're making that shift from this thought to zero point to the new thought.
Hmm.
It's like, oh, a whole new parallel reality opens up to us, and we're just walking in that one where, yeah, the cop all of a sudden gets a call and they're going the other way, and
right.
We just tootle on home and give thanks life is as we wish it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited from that perspective of seeing that this technology is available, because now I can apply directly to them to help me prove or see what happens when we sculpt language while we're in their gizmo.
Very interesting, because... Yeah, it for people out there who, and I'm not even sure if language, there I go again, right? But anyway, language sculpting, I've zero thought about it that way when I've done things that have shown very strange, sort of perceivably quantum effects, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When something so remarkable happens that sort of gets you out of a jam, for example, like you said, right?
Exactly.
And I've had that happen, so I know that it's possible, and I know that my state of mind in the presence of the occurrence is part of it, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I've yet, or at least up until now, I had yet to consider it as language. But then, of course, I'm a person who always says, you know, the world is made of language, as I parrot my friend Terrence. So,
what goes along with the language is the
image. It's actually the word.
The image is the emotional response of the body.
It's the word and the pictures we're creating with that word. Either the pictures we remember to pick up the milk and everything's good when we get home, or we have not forgotten to pick up the milk, in which case we come home and then we remember, oh, I forgot the milk.
You just programmed yourself for it by saying it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And especially with children, when we're communicating with our children, it's so important to be clear for them so they know. At first, it helps them wire in their body and their mind and their language connection. It makes it much more sensible for them when they hear us say, their car's coming down the street, I want you to stay on the sidewalk, rather than there are cars on the street, I don't want you to run into the street and get hurt.
Right.
Okay, so the children see that image. They pick up thought forms, of course, and the feelings that go with them of, the kid's running into the street, and bam. So it's what we're thinking. It's the words. It's the images that go with those words. It's the emotional charge with it. And language sculpting helps us to just be conscious about it so that we say we want, we actually get.
Right. There's that great line from Alice in Wonderland where, is it the Dormouse? I forget exactly who the character is, who says, say what you mean and mean what you say.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's a big part of what you're getting across here.
Yeah, that's coherent reality.
We've been very naive about our use of language and how it really does affect the way the world works and the way the world is perceived.
Well, we were led down that little path there with great intention, I'm sure.
Mm.
Because there's too much negative languaging or knotted languaging around, like, real winners don't use drugs, or being a mother against drunk driving instead of a mother for sober driving.
Mm.
You know, it's like... things like that are commonly out there. Don't drink and drive. It's deadly.
Oh, right.
So you're getting the thought forms of drinking, driving, dying.
Right.
Don't speed,
lights.
It kills.
The blinking lights that say, you drink, you drive, you lose.
Hmm.
I mean, it should be stay sober and win or something. something of that.
We all win. Actually, we know the people, the police department people, who could help us change that language, and they actually support our domestic harmony campaign. That's the other thing, too. Our chief of police, Lawrence Mahuna, I gave him a bunch of bumper stickers and neon green ribbons, and he went out and put the bumper stickers on the county fleet police cars. So many of the county fleet police cars for this island now have our Just Say Yes to Domestic Harmony bumper stickers on them, which is an awesome message from the police, believe me.
Oh, boy, you're zero kidding me.
Yeah, for sure.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. All right, so if we get our act together and we can get back to being reasonable creatures where we take care of one another and the other creatures that we share the planet with, Michael, what's it take to get out of here? In other words, if we, you know, once we make the place paradise and we want to stay, then how, you know, what is it going to take, honestly, for real space travel? Not this we're going to go to the moon in 2018, which I just, you know,
First of all, there looks like there will be concepts that go beyond rockets. If you want to go back to the 1930s, just to show what they had back then, look up the work of Thomas Townsend Brown.
Sure, and Schauberger and those guys.
Schauberger is another, although it's hard to find decent writing about him.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a lot of things going, too. There's very alternate history, like Nick Cook and a few others.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on, you know, even Michael Sala would tell you it's hard to, you know, validate all these things because it's sometimes hard to tell what's disinformation.
Anyway. For sure.
But T. Townsend Brown's work is well documented. And he had these things that he called gravitators made out of wax and red lead oxide that he put a 300,000-volt charge on. And it went in the direction of the positive charge.
Mm.
And this was recreated by a high school child here at about age 15. She won a first prize in a science fair. So we know the effect works. And that's just a hint, really, of what the underlying physics might be. But it means we had devices that capable of doing that in the 30s. According to Stephen Greer, we had operational ones about 1950 to 58.
Right.
And that we still have them. So part of what I think is going on, what's it take, is to release all the technology that they're sitting on so that we can actually use it to help the planet and help ourselves and clean the planet and go where we need to go. I mean, suppose the sun gets hotter and stays that way. We might have to either move or move the planet. For the moment, I can give you scenarios by which you could get as far as the moon or Mars with rockets, but I think that's really a dead end.
Yeah, I agree. I'm zero interested in talking about rockets.
Yeah. So I think that the fundamental understanding of space and time is coming, and at some point we'll have something much like you might imagine the UFOs have.
Right.
And
right.
What we seem to have developed in the military, at least. They called it Berry control, gravity control.
Mm-hmm.
There's been something like the Podlyakov experiment that was recreated.
Right, the Russian, sure.
And they got a 100-milligram weight change. So we know already that there's some ways to control gravity at least a little bit. So somewhere along those lines, we're going to come up with a drive, and we'll be able to go where we need to go.
Do you think that because of the advance of things like computer technology and proliferation of information and synergistic effects of, you know, crossbreeding of information that's happening over the internet, do you think that even if the technology that we're assuming exists that has been held tightly and without being shared with the general public, or even the knowledge of it being shared, do you think that even if that stuff was held as tightly as it's been held, or that even if it didn't exist, that we will that we are still close to breakthroughs? Even you know, people in their basements or their garages whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. We have such convergence going on so many different levels right now. According to Robert Anton Wilson, he called it the jumping Jesus phenomenon. How fast does it take? How long does it take for the total knowledge of the human race to double?
To double, right.
And even back when he was calculating, it was doubling in less than a year.
Lord.
So since it was an exponential process, at this point it's probably doubling every hour, every minute, something of that like that. So, yes, I think it's just going to leak out. Parents thought there was going to be this, like, what do you call it, eschatological singularity or something like that. It was just everything was going to converge all at once right at the end there.
Right, that everything possible would exist at the same time, basically, or the knowledge of it.
And his favorite one was all the time travelers would show up.
Right, it was funny because Terrence said that was the, he loved the time travel scenario because he said that it was one of the few scenarios that he could come up with where, you know, we have a world that we could still walk around in, you know, because he said otherwise it seems like it's going to be something very strange, but time travel would sort of satisfy all the variables that needed to be satisfied, because essentially, because of the paradoxical situation, linear time would sort of cease to exist, and therefore the time wave could end, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But anyway, it's certainly interesting stuff, and there are a lot of people that have either grabbed onto those same ideas or have, you know, generated them of their own accord. Ray Kurzweil is a guy who's not very spiritually minded, but he's more of a technocrat when it comes to this stuff, but he... and many others that are peddling the singularity story are all saying the same thing, that technology, information, etc., all these things are reaching an omega point of sorts, and who knows what comes after that.
Yeah, you can see it in Bucky's graphs where everything is going exponential.
Oh, Bucky Fulminster.
Yeah, Buckminster Fuller.
I'm sorry, Bucky Fulminster. It's only 1:25 a.m. Okay, I can get away with it.
Buckminster Fuller.
He went to my college too. I should be smacked for saying that. But anyway, certainly, yeah, our Buckminster Fuller. Yeah.
And some of his graphs, if you look, they cross light speed at about 2012.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and there are also graphs from people like, you know, that you wouldn't expect it so much from, like the World Bank and the IMF. You know, they've got a set of graphs that'll set your hair on end too. That they, you know, it's just they zero share them with anybody. But they're saying the same thing. That, you know, they're going, oh boy.
Well, Fuller had this thing called ephemeralization, that each generation of technology would do more with less.
Mm.
So in the limit, you would be able to do everything with nothing.
I love it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're going.
Back to the magic from which we've come, right?
Yes.
Yes. The zero point.
Yay. Yippee. 1, 2, 3, jump.
Yes.
Right? Right.
So we do have some other things to discuss too, Mike.
Please.
All right. Well, first of all, on January the 23rd, 1999... some of the partners of the Sirius Institute, including Nixie and Jack and Michael, myself, and Tiger, went over to Maui, where we recorded the humpback whales off the coast of Kihei,
mm-hmm.
and that's where the whales played the vocalizer for the first time ever. And now I'll pass it on to Michael, and he can give the audience some of the technical details and why that's so exciting and important and part of our upcoming work.
Well, part of this started when we learned that... canaries, humpbacks, dolphins, and orcas all sang in the Lucy Harrison scale. So we got to thinking there were ways to code language as music. So, for example, 14 tones in Hawaiian would be enough to... Or, I'm sorry, excuse me. There are 14 phonemes in Hawaiian. If we assign one frequency per phoneme and then hook that all together with a speech synthesizer, if the dolphins or the humpbacks could hit the right frequency patterns, they would be able to speak in a synthetic voice.
Kind of like Stephen Hawking.
Yes, and yes, exactly. And Hawaiian happened to be the easiest because it has the fewest phonemes.
Is that right?
Yeah, they might be able to do it with English, but it requires more like 48.
Oh, gosh, yes, English is the last one you want to use.
I suggest we start with Hawaiian. In any case, that was...
I suggest Lakota.
Oh, I don't know anything about Lakota, really.
Well, we'll talk about it another time, but I say it sort of seriously.
Yeah, thank you. I consider it, yes, of course. But anyway, on with this. The thought was that there needed to be a way to measure the pitch. So this vocalizer was a little device that would track the pitch of whistles and your voice.
Mm-hmm.
It was intended for human voice. So up to about 5 kilohertz, it would track the pitch and give you a MIDI number, Musical Industry Digital Interface number,
right.
For the note. So... the vocalizer also had a synthesizer built in. So off Kihei, we had an underwater speaker, a hydrophone, and some recording gear and the vocalizer in between. So when the humpbacks sang, we picked up their sounds, converted it to MIDI, and sent it back out. The underwater speaker converted in the same pitch pattern, but with the sound of cello.
Yes.
So what they heard coming back through the underwater speaker was their own voices as cello.
Uh-huh.
And they played with that for at least a half an hour. And we have a sample. If you go, if you search on Planet Puna for CD, it should get you to a humpback harmony, I think I called it. Yes, humpback harmony.
Uh-huh.
And if you play that, it shows one of the times when they whacked the synthesizer with such an amazing push of sound that it sent it into screaming feedback. After which they sort of lost interest, I think. They had the entire response worked out.
Amazing.
But it's a start. It's the first time that a whale played a musical instrument.
Remarkable. But it's not just novel.
Well, I think it's significant.
Right.
The start of a communication interface.
Absolutely.
So that's what today is. And then, about 2 weeks ago, actually almost 3.5 weeks ago, Cheryl McGill from the STOP LFAS group that we're members of approached us to create a document, a resolution or proclamation, resolution we created, for the California Coastal Commission to submit as part of the testimony to recommend that they put fairly stringent guidelines around the use of sonar and things along the California coast when the Navy came calling for permission to do their testing out there. So we created a really beautiful document, the California Coastal Commission Safe Coast Resolution, and it's up on planetpuna.com too, and Cheryl was able to get it to some of the coastal commissioners, even though there were like 17,000 emails to them about this issue. That's how much people care and were motivated to get in touch and be heard about this. So our document went in directly to some of the commissioners, and we're really happy about that.
Great.
They wound up, you know, holding the Navy to the high standards that they've established now, mitigation measures and stuff.
So now the Navy has to decide if they're going to comply or start a catfight about it. And along those lines, similar lines, the largest supermarket chain in Japan decided to stop selling dolphin meat on the basic excuse that it was contaminated with mercury and above the Japanese equivalent of EPA standards, and therefore they dropped the product from their all their stores.
Was that just a red herring, though, so to speak?
No,
oh,
I think
no, this
it's very,
is
very
real
serious.
Thing.
It's the largest supermarket chain in all of Japan.
Right, but I mean the idea that it was because of mercury. Was it really because of other pressures?
I'm sure that was part of it, because Rick O'Berry was one of the ones pressuring, and they had just done another shore slaughter of hundreds of dolphins there to document. So I'm sure it had some aspect of that. But it allowed, you know, from a Japanese point of view, it allowed them to save face.
Sure, which is a
Japanese
big deal. Right.
The Japanese still remember the Miyamata incident.
Oh, my gosh.
Many people were poisoned by industrial mercury and cadmium.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a sensitive spot, and it worked. So
great.
And then the UN Year of the Dolphin has come up just out of the blue in a way.
When is that?
This year, 2007, the United Nations announced it, yep.
Wow, wonderful.
This is really very
Y-O-D,
exciting.
YOD, Year of the Dolphin.
All right.
And you'll see they're doing a number of public relation moves to publicize the status of the dolphins and various things that are affecting them.
Yep.
All right. Well, look, another break. Okay, you guys?
Okay.
We'll do it here, and we'll come back, and we've got another half hour to talk some more.
Okay, we have lots more to share still.
let's not take a break then. Let's just keep talking. Let me do something really quick here, okay?
Okay. Uh-huh.
Program support for this program and for KOPN in general comes from Colors. Colors is an educational organization made up of local independent businesses, community organizations, and citizen members. We'd like you to know that local ownership ensures that important decisions are made by local people who live in the community and who are affected by those decisions. Information is available at colorsalliance.org. And Colors Dollars participants for the upcoming fund drive will include 9th Street Video, Columbia Computer Center, and others. All right, there, I took care of my responsibilities, so we can jump right back into it here. So, all right, what's next on the list, Star? You guys are so busy. You got your hands in all kinds of things. I love it.
Well, fortunately, on an island, it's pretty easy to be involved with a lot of things because everything's relatively close. So when we go to different events and things, we meet people that we're working with and doing different projects with, or people who have information for us, or we have information for them. So it's definitely easier living on an island the way we do. And then, so one of the things that's coming up, in part because of Year of the Dolphin, but we've been working towards this for a long time, is what's going to be our International Dolphin Harmony Center, or words to that effect, which is what we're calling our habitat. It's a human-dolphin shared environment, co-creative habitat, where people would get to live, you know, in homes along the water really close, or some kind of underwater component, and places where the dolphins could come in and we could have easier continual access when they're around with each other, so that we can start living together, just like Margaret Howe did in that work with John Lilly years ago, and Peter the Dolphin in the Virgin Islands.
Mm.
She actually shared a space with him, and a great deal of understanding and information came through them spending that time with each other. So our habitat is dedicated towards having that environment where we could be that close and see what comes, because so many people are being inspired. So many people are having different kinds of telepathic communications with them. We'd like to make it possible for a group of individuals to come together with the dolphins and see what comes of that time with each other, you know, that closer connection, that synergy. So that's partly the basis of the Dolphin Harmony Center, but also a place where people from all around the world can come and learn about how to live in harmony. We might as well.
Yeah.
So I was over talking, sorry, with legislators about that too this year, and getting good response from that. And we, Michael can talk about the newest updates with John Lilly, John Lilly Research Institute, and Philip Bailey, our colleague and partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, our colleague and partner, Philip Hansen Bailey Lilly, actually, has gathered up many of the bibliographic references of John's, about 125 papers, and the majority of those have just been scanned to searchable PDF image files.
Wow, wonderful.
And so we'll be mounting those at johncelilly.com, and we'll soon have a website called the John C. Lilly Research Institute, which is Philip Bailey's organization. And we'll have it up on several, probably at least three MIR sites when we get it all up.
Wonderful.
So eventually we will have the majority of John's corpus of work available on the web. And this would take months to pull out of the literature. It's just so neat to have the real papers up there. So anybody that wants to see the actual work that was done with the dolphins and syllable counting and language reproduction and that sort of thing will be able to eventually see it soon.
Wow. That's so great. You know, it's remarkable how much work was done during that time period in this particular field and so many others that still is the benchmark.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We just read another copy, or got another copy of The Dolphin in History,
mm-hmm.
by Ashley Montague and Lilly, in which it basically describes that all the things we've been talking about whales and dolphins and their capabilities, were known as just common knowledge in the classical world, in the ancient world, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
Right.
And then between the Middle Ages and the Inquisition and everything else, the Western civilization lost it for about 2,000 years.
Amazing.
So that's what we call the Delphic tradition.
Right.
That we are now bringing forward, that's been rediscovered largely by Lilly and his co-workers originally.
And Horace Dobbs and others.
Horace Dobbs and many others, of course. Yeah. And now thousands of people that are coming to see the dolphins and watch the whales and are having their own dreams and visions and telepathy and zaps and various other downloads.
Michael, I'm going to ask you something since it's late, and there are a lot of people that are talking about it on the web that are chatting about this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sort of a mushroom enthusiast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I've had this idea that I'd love to take psilocybin in the presence of a dolphin or a whale that was willing, you know, to because it is funny, but at the same time, I say this to you as a neurologist, you know,
mm-hmm.
Do you think that there might be any reason to do that with, you know, both from a scientific aspect and from your personal experience?
In the literature, John Lilly had given LSD to a couple dolphins.
Right,
one of
right.
Which was having a hard time adapting to the situation of being with the humans.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly after this experience, the dolphin was better able to, you know, interact with humans and was a little more calm with his situation. He thought the dolphins got much more open and friendly during that time. And that's about all he reported. It was a rather short paper.
Mm-hmm.
I do gather that he was able, using such things coupled with the isolation tank, to he has written that he's coupled into the dolphin group mind and the sperm whale group mind,
mm-hmm.
and been able to share that way. So I think yes, it's a profitable thought.
See, because I had read the same as you about him. I shouldn't use the word experimenting, but. You know, giving the dolphins the substance. I'm thinking they don't need it. We're the ones
right.
that need it.
Yeah, I mean, I was just explaining the closest mm-hmm. that I knew of. And mm-hmm. then the other thing that comes to mind, since we were talking about the Delphic tradition, was Pliny the Elder has a long description of the Greek fishermen sharing bread soaked in wine with the dolphins they just fished with.
Mm-hmm.
And since bread soaked in wine, or wine, was a carrier for psychedelics,
right.
it's obvious that the Greek fishermen were sharing their finest sacraments and their finest psychedelics with the dolphins as part of the party after they fished together.
Very interesting.
So I'm sure we had a joint shamanic thing going there for thousands of years.
Hmm.
So yes, I think it's a great experiment.
Why don't you do it? All right. You don't have to answer. What's next? I got so many questions. I don't know which ones to choose from.
Well, we could just mention briefly the Dolphin Fiesta 2007 that's taking place over in Germany this summer.
All right, what's that about?
Elizabeth Battenberg and the Water Babies group over there. They're a sister research group working with water births and dolphin-attended births and also water training for early childhood development. And last year around this time, they had the first Dolphin Fiesta in Mexico. And this coming summer, they're having one in Germany. So Michael and I are invited speakers along with Horace Dobbs and Tim Wiley, some of the other luminaries in the dolphin world that we know personally.
Wow.
So we're going to get a chance to go over there and bring my son and his partner and my new granddaughter. Yes, well, that's the biggest thing anyway, really, since we spoke last, was the birth of my granddaughter, Violet.
Really cool.
Yes.
And the birth of my son.
And the birth of your son, that's right.
Wow, that is so cool. So when is the Germany thing?
August 28th to September 2nd, but we'll be going over early, of course, and spend time with our Cetacea partners, Napier Martin and Ian Middleton and Trish and Trudy and who else? Oh, yeah, Robert Watts, producer, the wonderful producer of the Star Wars movies, our good
mm-hmm.
buddy,
mm-hmm.
and, of course, my other son, John Cahan, and his family.
Fantastic. All right.
Michael. Well, we're going over to see the Navy people again.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as I'm done and free in my schedule with the Rowan Brothers fundraising concert,
mm-hmm.
February 25th, we'll be heading over to Kauai to the Barking Sands missile range, where we're going to go listen on invitation to the whales going through the channel out there in Kauai and just take a look at their setup while the whales are actually there and, you know, look at the technology and actually see if we could get a live whale feed from them to us for a concert we're thinking of doing in March as part of our celebration of whales, great and small.
Right on.
And then, they got a whole bunch of Domestic Harmony bumper stickers and green ribbons as well. So the Navy is on board with the Domestic Harmony program.
And they did agree to share the data, the whale data with us.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, they said they do it for other researchers.
Yeah, cool.
In the process of setting that up.
All right, can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
That came up on the web here?
Uh-huh.
And it's an interesting, Michael, an interesting one. I think it relates to this remember this, the silver ring story?
The dolphin rings.
This person asked, any chance for Star or Dr. Hyacin to explain again the large boiling toroidal vortex that a group of dolphins create?
I'll let Michael do that one. But we do know a fellow named Matisha here who can do the same thing, and it's pretty amazing to watch him blow bubbles out like that. We'll put a link up to his website, and then
cool.
You'll be able to see all these awesome pictures he takes. But he does the rings. But I'll let Michael answer that technical question. That's a good one.
Oh, it's a very good one. Basically, they're known to blow these bubble rings that can be start out small, then the dolphins can expand them to large, like several feet across. Sometimes they expand them and then swim through them. At other times,
they can expand them like a lasso.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So they can start small, they get very big, and then they can do things like swim through them. Or they can make them small again and then hook them on their pectoral fin. But if you think about it, it's just a piece of air. So the fact that it happens to be going along precisely at the leading edge of the fin means they have to hold it there.
Right, they're controlling it.
Yeah, and then given that the bubble ring wants to be horizontal and going up and expanding, the fact that it's vertical around the pec and it's just sitting there means it's under full, complete, active control by the sound fields, I would assume, that the dolphins are putting out. It's really an astounding thing.
It really is remarkable.
Yeah, because any bubble ring longer than pi times its diameter wants to spontaneously break up into other bubbles. So they have to pump energy into that and keep it spinning and do all these other things to keep it stable. And it's just an astounding performance.
and it hints at anti-gravity, too, or something.
I suppose, in the sense of the U4 metric, if you want to look that part up.
What does that mean?
There's a geometry of space-time that is related to vortex rings, that's all.
Mm. Aha, another hint.
Another
you better show. Listen closely to that, to the rewind of that one, folks. So there was one word, I don't know what he said, but listen to it, all right? All right.
Have to keep some of the cats in the bag.
Let's see. Well, we've got about 10 minutes, so before I ask any more questions, Star, I'll let you chat for a few minutes, and Michael both, because I'm sure there are some things you maybe want to talk about before we finish up. What else would you like to share?
Well, one thought I'd like to share is that for people in the audience who participated in our jump over, I'd really love for them to keep track of the next few days or weeks or whatever and just see if they actually feel a difference in what they're living and how they're living, if they feel like they did make a shift. Because what Michael and I are noticing and other people too is that it actually seems really like we're moving into parallel realities. We actually are moving and changing from this trajectory to that one. It just like keeps getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And while things keep getting better for us, then we're creating like a singularity of getting better energy for everything around us. So to the extent that people are really able to, and, you know, practice, I guess, getting into that newer state of being, they should be able to experience and say, wow, you know, that really went better than it used to, or that went better than I was expecting, or, wow, I had a good outcome with that, or something, so that they can see that there has been a shift.
Okay.
That's one thing I'd like to encourage people to do. And also practice being kinder with each other. That's almost one of the most important things we can actually work on, is just being kinder and sending out good thoughts to everything. Because ultimately, in the end, there is just one. You know, it's just all one universe. Wherever you go, there's still just that one universe. So ultimately, we're all part of the same oneness. So it just feels better to be able to be comfortable with that and to be accepting of that.
And it's better for you too, right?
Mm-hmm. It's better for us. It definitely contributes to physical health. And again, coming into our future, the one we want to be, we can anticipate that, you know, we get past the need for big hospitals and all that medical stuff focused on sickness and disease. 90% of all disease is considered to be stress-related in one way or another, so we want to have a wellness culture and a wellness planet and just drop a bunch of that stress. And there are ways that we can do it, but certainly it starts with, I'd really like to drop that stress.
Yeah.
I just want to let it go now.
Right.
So that's part of the meditation I had just before the show tonight, was different ways that we can get in touch with the things that we want to let go of, and like extra weight that we maybe put on to protect ourselves from the meanness or the pain around us, you know, or substance issues. A lot of people who are drinkers or who use, you know, opiates in different ways do it because there's a lot of pain around them. They're empaths, for goodness sakes.
Mm.
And they keep feeling other people's stuff, plus they have some of their own. I guess kind of like overwhelming, but they can start putting good thoughts out to themselves and others and say, yeah, it's feeling better out there now. I can just cut back at least a little bit and see how I'm doing with it, you know. And
right. We can restore the adrenals and restore the endorphins and trigger the endorphins. And
yeah, and clear the limbic imprints. I mean, there's hope and faith. And Sheldon Noddle said in a number of his publications, you know, new technologies would be coming out to help the people be liberated from the kind of, you know, binds they were put in, or the, you know, culture put into us,
mm-hmm.
about all the knots and all the, you know, education, and how education kind of like slows our brains down. And, you know, if you look at what a human is meant to be in contrast to what we actually are, we're just a smidgen of our natural potential. And so our new world is to help us get in touch with our natural state, our natural potentials of being connected and well and part of the flow of life, and, you know, helping others, having a consciousness of helping others is going to be a really important trait for us to have. And we might as well be cultivating all these things now and living the life we want to live.
Here, here.
And they're there. And everywhere and everywhere.
Right.
Well, it looks like everything is so enfolded that everything in the universe is enfolded within you. And it's accessible.
Yeah, and when we take the knots out through putting zeros in with language sculpting, then poof, then we're connected to everything. So as we move through life in that kind of way, what we want and need next is right there. Because we're right in that perfect flow of it all. And I know it's interesting to say this from Hawaii, where I'm surrounded by water all the time, but I feel like if people in your audience in Missouri and Iowa and different places all around the world just go into a little meditation state and imagine themselves by a nice, beautiful ocean beach or beach somewhere, and feel for themselves what it's like to be in the water and having fun and being playful, just like the dolphins and the whales. And pretty soon, anybody could access this kind of state, and then it just carries with us. Like when I first saw a whole bunch of wild dolphins in Mexico, that image stayed with me for years and still does, and always could instantly put me back into a state of, it's all right, even though this is happening.
Hmm. Yeah, it's so strange being in the presence of something like that, too. The only really remarkable experience I've ever had with a dolphin was in New Zealand. I was actually diving in Australia, but I took a week and went to New Zealand, and I had an ear infection. I got an ear infection from when I was diving the week before. Mm-hmm. And we were out in a boat, and a whole school of dolphins showed up, and I was thinking, gosh, should I get in the water with my ear, you know? And I went back and forth, no, I better stay on the boat. No, I should get in the water. Finally, I just jumped in, right?
Of course.
And boy, oh boy, was I glad I jumped in, let me tell you. You know, it was a remarkable experience. So, anyway,
did they fix your ear, too?
Well, it was, as a matter of fact, it certainly was better very shortly thereafter. I'm not sure if it was the antibiotics I was pumping in it, or if the dolphin zapped me. Or,
maybe both.
You know, maybe a little of both. But certainly, even if that wasn't a part of it, you know, it was one of those recognitions, you know, where you just say, whoa, there's more going on here, you know.
Yes.
And then you can, like we were talking about earlier, we sort of come full circle, we can extend that, but the dolphins and the whales certainly give us this great, great opportunity to really get close again to something that's really close to us.
Yes.
So, Michael, where, and Star, both of you, for people listening, you know, what, you know, it's easy to sit back and go, wow, look at what Michael and Star are working on, listen to this and that and the dolphins and DNA. And what can we be doing? You know, what can people be doing to sort of help maybe whatever move along, even in their own lives? I mean, how does this stuff kind of come home?
Well, I think just reading about the dolphins or listening to them or anything like that helps just to get you in that wavelength. Beyond that, there's lots of we've certainly seen that local actions and things like we've done, like the resolutions to the California Coastal Mission and simple things like that, do have effect. So anybody can do that from anywhere and have an effect.
Mm-hmm.
Something
and
like 90% of the people already support the protection of the whales.
Yes. And the other thing is, we're getting ready for our Celebration of Whales Creighton Small Festival, but the plan is for that to be an international festival, so that people in coastal communities, obviously in particular, could set up some kind of celebration, some kind of festival, some kind of appreciation. Like, our county is really supportive of this, and Mayor Kim and our county council and stuff, because they've come up with Whale Appreciation Day proclamations and resolutions, and they've come up with, you know, protect the dolphins and the whales and, you know, stop the sonar kinds of things coming in. So individually, anybody can go to their local public servants and elected officials and say, you know, take a look at planetpuna.com and look at this proclamation, and we want something like this for ourselves, and we're here to ask you to do this. And same thing with the domestic harmony proclamations. It's really important for us to remember that, especially now, that the more we reach out to our public servants, and we have to remind them that they're our public servants. Okay, they're our public servants. We pay them to be there. That they're there to really listen to us. They're there to hear what we have to say. Sometimes, because they've been used to hearing their own patter for so long, it might take a little while to get through to them, but if we're persistent, they'll hear us and they'll respond accordingly. So it's a year for empowerment. It's a year for connectivity. It's a year for getting our way.
Yeah.
I like that.
And we found that if you approach with friendliness and honor and treat them with respect, anybody, then they respond that way.
Mm-hmm.
I came into the Navy, for example, with a big chip on my shoulder for a while.
Right.
That softened very quickly because the people around were human beings, ready to think, ready to listen, ready to consider what we had to say.
Yeah, that's super encouraging, the stuff that has come out of your visits with the Navy. I would zero have guessed that that was going to happen.
We wanted it to.
Sure.
More
did.
Than anything, we wanted to draw that line in the sand,
uh-huh.
is what it was about. And since then, that term has come up in a lot of different places.
Uh-huh.
So we've reached an echo here where a lot of people have drawn that line in the sand and said, we're willing to stand for these things that we hold dear to us, that we want to see in the world. And when we hold that line, then, oh, the other stuff has to back away, because we remember it's all energy, it's all energetics. It's like whose willfulness is greater than the other, ultimately. Then it's relatively easy to get our power back again.
Mm.
We're just so used to that, oh, we can't do this, they're bigger than us, and blah, blah, but well, if you think that way, it'll happen. But if you think you're empowered and you can make a difference, then they'll feel that. They'll respond accordingly,
mm-hmm.
because it's the energy of it. Anything will.
I'm finding there are people like me everywhere, whatever their situation.
Isn't that the truth?
They might be under certain constraints because of their position, but they still are human beings. They're still rational. They're still doing the best they can in the place they are. And they're much like your counterpart there.
Mm-hmm.
They can be communicated with. Yay!
All right, you guys. Well, we're going to have to put an end to our communication for this evening. But it has been fantastic, as always.
And thank you, Michael. Thanks.
Oh, well, thank you so much. As always, time flies. It's already 2 o'clock in the morning here. So.
Wow. Well, it's just about 10 o'clock here, so Michael and I will have a full night ahead of us still to play and have some more fun and talk about our wonderful interview with you and your audience.
All right. Well, everybody appreciates it, and we appreciate the work you're doing. And people, we get so lost in these conversations. I don't do my duties as a host. The website, which I should mention more often, is www.planetpuna.com, And you can also get there from my site at MikeHagan.com. But wonderful work you guys are doing, and I just encourage the heck out of you. And I'm so glad that you're making great progress, apparently, both of you, on lots of different fronts.
Thank you. Thanks for all of your love and support.
Oh, yeah.
You got it. Aloha, you guys.
Aloha.
Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, everybody. The wonderful Dr. Michael Heisen, Star Newland, on the web one more time, planetpuna.com. Doing just wonderful stuff, and very pleased and happy that we can share their work and their wonderful aloha with all you people that are listening to the program. So, all right, it's Mike, and it's just a little bit before 2 o'clock here. Got a minute or so left. I'll put on some music here in a second because, as usual, no one's coming in here to cover the shift after my program, so I can go over a little bit, and then I'll shut the place down here in just a few minutes. But we will... close things out. I've been playing a little bit of the Tragically Hip tonight. Might as well close out with the Hip. My apologies to Void's Anatomy. I really was looking forward to playing your music tonight, but I had some problems early on with my player, so I just decided it wasn't worth it to keep messing with it, and we substituted out with some other stuff. But we'll make it up to you and play that stuff in the future. And in the meantime, I will say thanks to everybody out there who's been listening to the program. We love you guys all. And come on back and see us, or listen to me, next week when Jonathan Zapp will be joining me, returning to the program. I really enjoyed my conversation with John Zapp a few months ago, and there was a whole lot more to talk about. He can talk about a whole lot of different subjects, so we'll do that with him next week. Jonathan Zapp at 11 p.m., as always, on KOPN 89.5 FM, Columbia, Missouri. This is the Tragically Hip, and the song is called Terrarium. It's Mike. Thanks for listening. I'll catch up with y'all later.
that there.